It's time for Twig. This week in Google, Jeff and Stacy are here. We've got lots to talk about. Stacy has been keeping an eye on Amazon reInvent. The conference is going on right now. Amazon made dozens of new product announcements. We'll break many of them down for you in the next few minutes. Google Fi opens up to other handsets. And towards the end, maybe the most important story of the year, it involves gene editing. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 484, recorded Wednesday, November 28th, 2018. We're all postnatal now. This Week in Google is brought to you by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on WordPress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month. Get 15% off any new plan at WordPress.com/twig. And by Privacy.com. Stop using the same card number everywhere. Use Privacy virtual cards and get a $5 credit off your first purchase. Learn more and sign up in under a minute with your debit or checking account at Privacy.com/twig. And by CuriosityStream, a subscription streaming service that offers 2,000 documentaries and nonfiction titles from some of the world's best filmmakers, including exclusive originals. Visit CuriosityStream.com/twit and use the code TWIT to get 1 month free. It's time for Twig, This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest news from the Googleverse. And today it's going to be a lot of news from the Amazonverse. Here to talk about all and sundry, we've got Mr. Jeff Jarvis. He's the Leonard Tau. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to wake you, Jeff. Leonard Tau, professor for journalistic innovation at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York and director of the Tau Knight Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. And he blogs at buzzmachine.com. he just barely fits behind his lower third. Professor Jarvis, hello.
Hello, and happy almost birthday, Leo.
Thank you. Yes, they've decorated the set a little prematurely with birthday hats.
Well, tomorrow's your day off.
Tomorrow so I'm taking a day off for my birthday, and that's my day off anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And Stacy Higginbotham is also here from StacyOnIoT.com. She's had a lovely day trying to follow the 372 announcements that Amazon made at Amazon. What is it? Amazon Relay?
Reinvent.
Reinvent. Redo. Request.
Nope.
AWS Reinvent.
Yes, we've got race cars, fish, blockchain, AI. It's going to be crazy.
They announced so many products. It's mind-boggling. The most interesting one was something called Deep Racer. And you can go to aws.amazon.com/deep-racer to find out more. I actually ordered it. It's not going to come till March, just kind of a bummer. It is, they say, the fastest way to get rolling with machine learning, literally. Get hands-on with a fully autonomous 1/18th scale race car driven by reinforcement learning, 3D racing simulator, and global racing league. So I guess they're going to have a league. Compete in the world's first global autonomous racing league. I have no idea what this is.
So I don't know if this is the most exciting piece of news, but it is definitely well-packaged, deep, nerdy news that you're like, oh, my God. So what they're talking about here, and it is big news, don't get me wrong, but I'm like, there's a lot of other news coming out. But this one, what's cool is they are showing a way to do what's called reinforcement learning at the edge. And by edge, they mean on a tiny little race car. So what they're doing is they're training a model using something called reinforcement learning. And the way reinforcement learning works, it's actually the same way that they trained Google's DeepMind to play Atari games. So you basically give it a goal and you're like, if you get it right, you keep going. If you get it wrong, you fall off. You, like in the car case, you derail and you're like, oh, that's not how. And each time it gets it right, it optimizes for that moment. So that's what reinforcement learning is about.
So that's like that Brev Walker I used to have, which is a screensaver. A box with four legs that couldn't walk, but it would keep trying different strategies, and then it would note, hey, I got a little farther this time, and so incorporate that strategy. And the theory was over days, weeks, and months, and it did take a long time, it would actually teach itself to walk.
Mm. Yes. I don't know if that's the exact model that that one was using, but it's similar concept.
This is a long time ago. I mean, this is a decade ago or more.
So that's why I'm like, maybe, because I don't actually know what you're talking about.
Oh, man, I wish I could still find this thing.
But what's cool about this is they're basically training the car in this tiny little car, and they're going to be like, okay, car, we've trained you on these tracks. Now go, and it's going to put it out in the real world. This is a big deal because you have to train things in the cloud on these giant GPUs, but then you also have to use models that are, you're building these super complicated models and getting them to run on a device that's like battery powered without a lot of compute power. It's really hard to do.
So that's, it's not connected to a server somewhere. It's not doing this in the cloud. It's doing it on board.
It's on board, and it's using. So that's why this is really interesting. I mean, it can connect to the cloud, but it's not, it learns the tracks and then runs them. So that's what's kind of happening here. That's worthwhile. It is also, I guess I'm not 100%.
I don't
sure
see how you can do a competitive race unless you have the same track. Right.
So yeah, that I'm not 100% sure. I'm like, I don't know how this works. I can explain the technical weird stuff behind it, but like how you win, I don't know.
But they're doing races.
Right. They're having a racing league.
But they're not like your physical things there. It's online, right? You upload what you taught your racer and see how it does against other racers in a virtual environment. It looks like. Evaluate your model on a simulated racetrack, tune your reward function and hyperparameters, train again to improve lap times, then submit your model to the virtual leaderboard to enter the AWS Deep Racer League. I take it back. Then, once you've been accepted, deploy your model to the AWS Deep Racer to pit your skills against others in real-world racing events. This sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah. And so like what I was talking about, so the reward function in like the video game things, it's like, don't die. In here, it's going to give you lots of different options for reward functions and parameters. Maybe it's like, hey, you can take turns this fast. I don't know what's important in racing, but those are the kind of things that you'll train it with. And you'll be like, okay, let's say your actual end goal is to, you know, stay upright and not fall off a track, then it might go slower and you're like, oh, that's a crappy end goal. Let's train it using this instead. This is really simplistic. I'm just trying to keep it light and heavy.
I hate to be a Scrooge McKilljoy, but doesn't it just go round and round and round and around? What's to learn?
No, there's probably, I mean, if it's a simulator, there's 20 different races. I'm assuming they're going to be kind of like the racetracks, like if you do Formula One, how each track is different.
Yeah, you won't know what the track is ahead of time. You're training it to enter an unknown situation and navigate.
Oh.
Like this, downloaded and installed the Brev screensaver. So this screensaver is going to, it's keeps dropping this thing in here and trying to walk. You see it has not, in fact, traveled any distance at all. So that is a failed iteration, and it's going to keep iterating until it finds an iteration that actually moves. And I'll tell you what, next year, just ask me, we'll leave this on for a year, see if it walks. I think it's the same kind of thing, except that you can have inputs to your deep racer as opposed to this, which just kind of, you know, the best distance I've done is 3 meters, and somehow I don't. This brick doesn't look like it's going anywhere. Oh, here's one. Oh, this is interesting. Look at that. See?
It moved.
It moved. It flipped itself over. Yeah. So, well, it's learned something here. This was this is the new champion. 3.57 meters. It's actually, I used to put it on my kids' computers. They loved it because it was, you know, for little kids, this is great because it's one thing more inept than they are at learning how to navigate the world. So Deep Racer is cool. I ordered one. I don't know if I have the, I have a feeling I can do it. It seems, I guess the question is, who is this intended for? Is this intended for kids to learn or for adults who are actually working in the field to do stuff with?
I think it's going to be probably for both, but mostly for adults who like to play with these toys.
It's a toy, though. It's not. Here well, it is. Here's the league. It's open to everyone. Live events. They'll be at London, Tokyo, Sydney, Singapore, and New York at AWS Summit locations. This is PR, right?
Yes. That's why I'm kind of like, is this the biggest news? I mean, from an economic standpoint in Amazon's business, no.
Well, it's pretty, it's $249. So actually list price is $300. So it's maybe make, help Amazon's bottom line a little bit. They get people excited.
Oh my gosh, Leo, here's what I found for you. So your screensaver uses agent-based modeling as opposed to reinforcement learning. And I have found a Quora answer on the difference between the two. I'm not reading it now because I'll stop paying total attention to you and that would be bad.
But leave this as an assignment for future research.
I will drop this in our chat if you care to learn.
Very interesting.
Oops. Maybe I'll drop this in chat. Maybe I won't.
Well,
so it says on the on that write-up you just showed from the order, the first selling point is that it's a way to learn more about ML.
Yeah, right. Amazon also debuted a file system compatible with Windows called AWFX, I think. I've lost the story. I clicked the link, but I didn't get the story. FSX. Amazon FSX for Windows file server to move customers from Microsoft to use Glacier Deep Archive as a cheaper data storage option coming in 2019. This is according to Bloomberg.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Amazon targets hybrid cloud customers with on-site servers.
So if we're talking about big themes from AWS, not just cool, like, tiny announcements, there I think were two or three that I thought were worthwhile. And I don't know if you want to talk about this.
Please.
But one is hybrid cloud. It is the recognition that Amazon has all of these enterprise customers who want to have their own stuff running on their own data centers. So there's a bunch of news around getting stuff to run together between their cloud and Amazon's cloud. There's services like Direct Connect that are going to make it easier and cheaper to connect those things securely. And so there's a bunch of stuff related to that, right?
Is Amazon, stay right there for a second, Stacey, stay right there.
Sure.
Is this like the old Google yellow box? Are they selling the server that you use on your site or you could use other equipment?
It's basically the software. You run their software and it syncs the two.
It syncs. Thank you.
It does more than sync. I believe you can also like develop in those environments and also run them in production on the cloud. Like there are lots of elements to this, but we'll just call it the ability to do it and keep it synced between places and to run it in both places and to develop in both places is kind of
how it reminds me of going back to the original like Netscape server days.
It is a pendulum that swings back.
Yes. okay. So that was one. Thank you.
Sure. Is IoT. They did a bunch of big announcements around IoT, and we should think about this IoT for industrial and enterprise customers. So they did more security for Greengrass, which is an IoT product that sits at the edge. And these all kind of fall also sort of into hybrid cloud, if we want to think about it that way, because they're also designed to run at the edge on someone's premise and in the cloud. Oh, you can't see my other hand where I'm doing my edge and cloud. Okay. And so they did a security thing with Greengrass. They did a couple like sensor analysis and pulling in sensor information. And I can't remember what those are called. Hold on. It's like, I've got like six Amazon screen tabs open. I'm like, I can't find that one. It's like Insight, IoT Insight. They also today announced a super fast time series database, which is really big in the industrial world because like that's where you're sending all this like, I'm at this and this is my temperature at this time. Temperature, time, or just basic state, you know, time. And there are two news announcements related to that. And then they had their satellite service, which I feel is kind of an IoT thing.
And that is a weird thing because it's how big is the market for satellite?
We don't know. That's what's interesting here.
It implies this is a large market. This is software services for people who run satellites, right?
Well, so basically it lets you, if you're interested in satellite connectivity, it lets Amazon run that instead of you, which could be like an opening up of the market because beforehand you had to build your own satellite station. So think of like a smaller version of Contact, like the lab that Jodie Foster lives in the movie Contact. So instead of doing that, you just buy it from Amazon, which means you could use satellite as a backup for maybe cellular in your connected car that you always want to be able to
So connect. It's a platform for people who want to use this kind of connectivity, not for people who launch satellites. In fact, it's called AWS Ground.
You'll do that. Bezos will do that for you too, but just wait a little bit.
Apparently, it's called AWS they're using Ground Iridium. Station. And it's, this is what Iridium has ended up doing. All right.
Yes.
It's a network of 12 satellite facilities around the world. And so the ground station, basically, it's a service. It's satellite as a service.
Jeez. Yeah.
Wow.
Have we ever had the head of AWS, the CTO of Amazon on one of your shows?
Oh, we should get him.
Werner?
Werner Fogels. Werner Fogels.
Werner doesn't do a lot of stuff anymore. They don't. So Werner is the sweetest, nicest, funniest man you will ever hang out with, but he is also very prone to talking out of school. So he doesn't. You don't see him in a lot of places.
I've been with him in conferences in his homeland.
Yes, and
in different language. I guess it's okay.
A delightful person.
Wonderful, absolutely. What big bear of a man? Yeah, he's wonderful.
But they put Matt Wood and Andrew Jassy are the people that they tend to put out into the world nowadays. And you should. They're great to talk to. They're both very smart and good to talk to.
So AWS Ground Station would remove the capital costs of building ground station networks off satellite operations. They've partnered with a number of companies, including Spire, which is a company that launches CubeSat. Little tiny satellites. They have 60 of them in orbit. With multiple sensors, they track ships and airplanes, gather atmospheric data to forecast weather. Spire says, you know, that's just an offshoot of our real business, which is analytics, but we had to put the satellites up. The Spire guy said, the same way we rent compute capacity on Amazon due to need, we'll now be able to rent ground station capacity to suck data from our satellites on demand. So I guess it is.
Oh,
it is. For so here's who have how satellites up there. They are working with Iridium as well.
So think about it this way. So if you know the difference between I'm just going to do it. IaaS, infrastructure as a service, versus platforms as a service, and versus software as a service. So I just went up a stack there. Amazon with AWS has the infrastructure as a service, right. Plus they have platforms as a service, right. As well. Salesforce is a software as a service. What Amazon is doing, the satellite providers are going to be the infrastructure. So the servers are equal to satellites in this example.
Right.
And then Amazon with Ground Station is going to be this PaaS layer that would be like a Heroku or a pick another PaaS layer in Amazon that I can't think of right now.
It makes you wonder why they don't launch satellites and do the whole stack.
Well, there's
a bunch of junk up there in space already.
Yeah, we don't need more. That's why they're working with Iridium, which was originally launched to be a satellite phone network, and then went bankrupt. Motorola launched them.
But is this part of?
So they're going to
is this Bezos's bigger picture with having a rocket company?
Well, but wait a minute. I think it's the other way around. I think this is Bezos. Really, all Amazon is infrastructure as a service.
Initially, it was
selling stuff, but the infrastructure is, you know, half the stuff Amazon sells on its website is not sold by Amazon. They are fulfillment as a service. It is infrastructure as a service. That's why they have trucks. That's why they have planes. That's the way how they have warehouses. In addition to all of those, they also have satellite ground stations. I guess that's enough of a business that they want to set that up.
All I'm saying is the Bezos has
Blue
rockets.
Origin. But that's not, is that Amazon? That's Bezos himself.
That's Bezos in Blue Origin. Yeah. That's because he has so much money, he doesn't know what to do with it. So he started a spaceship company. Right.
But he also did Bezos. A great Prime deal with Washington Post, even though those are separate.
Right. Yeah, no, there's definitely interconnects.
Yeah.
I think this is clever. maybe this is a better insight into what Jeff Bezos's actual ambition is just to say infrastructure as a service. I think that's an interesting play.
So what interests me a lot. Sorry, go ahead, Stacey.
I was just going to say, so the interesting thing about, and I did not come up with this, but what Amazon has done is it's created this platform, right, that it can deliver services on. So be it infrastructure, like satellites, be it servers, whatever. And then it has a way to see what's happening on those services. And what you see it do is when it sees something that it likes, that a lot of people are using, it's like, oh,
jump right on.
I'm going to build that. Yeah. So then it builds that, but it builds it also as a platform. So what it's basically doing, it's just building layers so it can see what's popular and then get in on that business. And it's brilliant.
It's data. Yep. You create infrastructure as a service, and then you use the resulting data to decide what other businesses to get into.
Well, they're also creating API, like Google, creating APIs to all this ML stuff that people can't build. So you're getting, it's not software as a service so much as added services to the infrastructure.
Well, and here's another thing they announced. You haven't gotten to all three. I'm going to guess that you're the third leg of the, you said the first thing was, I'm sorry.
Hybrid cloud.
The second thing was IoT, which you could argue is
industrial/enterprise readiness for IoT.
What's the third one?
ARM servers! Woo!
What is it? She's gotten excited. I don't know what about.
The damnedest things excite this woman, yes.
ARM-based servers.
ARM-based
servers. As her just hooting.
It's the last thing I would have thought Stacey would hoot about.
Oh, yeah. I know you guys are excited about the fish, but guys, I have been waiting and waiting for like 8 years.
She's talking about both Jeff and I are buying Amazon-enabled Billy Bass, Big Mouth Billy Basses. That's really the level we're at.
That's our level, yeah.
And
yeah,
she's excited.
Meanwhile, Stacey is up with the cloud.
Up there, ARM-based servers.
I'm sorry, y'all. That's
you're better
what I
than
love.
Us. We accept that, Stacey.
I'm not better. I'm just different. Okay, so this was exciting to me, and I guess probably expanding the Alexa ecosystem is probably number four, and legitimately it's probably number three, and ARM-based servers is way down there, but give it to me, y'all, because I have been waiting for this forever, which is the idea that instead of just using x86-based servers, now using ARM servers makes a lot more sense, especially when we start talking about things like virtual machines. So when we started talking about virtual machines way back in like, I don't know, was it 2006, I guess is when they launched. It started to make sense because you didn't actually need these massive cores to run these small little spin-ups of compute jobs. So that's when this idea of lower powered and optimizing performance per watt, so creating more efficient data centers came in. And ARM is a way to do this. But man, it took forever. We had to get to like 30. We went from 32-bit ARM-based cores. We had to get 64-bit based cores. Then we had to get chip designers to build it. But the big implication, and then we had to get people like Amazon to use it, which is why this is such a big deal. So Amazon's now using it. Baidu uses it. I think Microsoft may use some ARM-based servers for some of their stuff.
This has to make Intel crazy.
Exactly, because there's two things here. One, there's a viable, for some workloads, competitor to Intel, and I'm sorry, AMD, I love you so much, but most weeks you are not a viable competitor. Right now, their current generation is. But also, people can license this ARM architecture and build totally different style chips based on it, which means you can have to you can optimize for different workloads, and that's a big deal. Okay, that's it.
Do you not think that AI, ML, RL also are those a big prong? Okay.
Yes, those are huge. That's why NVIDIA has been able to get into the data center. Now, there are not still that many workloads right now. You still have, and I would love, actually, I don't know if anyone does this, divides up the types of workloads there are. Like, if you think about, like, transactional database workloads versus, you know, just straight up spinning up an EC2 instance versus machine learning or, you know, encoding, decoding, all of those things are very specific jobs. And I don't know what percentage of jobs could be done on ARM. So.
Amazon also announced Inferentia.
This is exciting, too.
A machine learning reference chip to compete with Google's TPU or NVIDIA. The cost and speed of the speed and cost of running machine learning operations are a competitive differentiator for enterprises. Speed advantages will make or break success of enterprises and nations. When you think of warfare, this speed can only be achieved with custom hardware, and Inferentia is AWS's first step to get into this game. That's Holger Mueller, who's an analyst with Constellation Research, talking to TechCrunch. Inferentia, I don't know anything about any of this stuff, but it does support TensorFlow, which is
and
Google's,
Cafe
and Cafe 2.
It supports all the big ones.
Yep. So this is, again, infrastructure as a service, right? This is, but it's machine language, machine learning.
Well, it's a chip. It's a chip that's going to run presumably best using Amazon SageMaker in other AI stuff, but it will also run these others. And the idea here is to get the lowest cost, basically to optimize your thing so it's either low cost or it does jobs faster, which I guess turns into low cost, or is more efficient so it costs Amazon less to run these models for their clients.
They also announced Amazon's Elastic Inference Engine. If they really had said something like Elastic Inference Engine Open, they could have called it EIEIO, which would have been, I think, better. But they missed a bet on that one. But the Elastic Inference Engine,
something the fish would be fun saying. Yes.
Lets users attach GPU-powered inference acceleration to any EC2 instance to reduce deep learning costs by 75%. So a lot of deep learning AI stuff in here.
The other thing that excites me in media is Amazon personalization, Amazon Personalize.
What's that?
So that makes their personalization services available as a service.
Their personalization services are not like blowing me out of the water.
Is that where they say people like you also bought the Big Mouth Billy Bass?
Yeah, but imagine, I've been arguing for media people to be doing this for years. And we don't, because we think that everybody wants the same one product we make. Personalization across recommendations of all sorts. It's a recommendation engine. And there's huge opportunity around recommendation.
If you do it right. Nobody's even been able to do it.
If you do it right. And Stacey has a point that Amazon's personalization, surprisingly, given all the data they have, is not the best. In fact they got rid of, I'm still pissed at them. About 6 months ago, they got rid of the personalized recommendations for me. And now it's all mixed into everything they do. And it's not as good. Before, it was much more straightforward. Here's what we're recommending to you. Here's why. And I could have an impact on that. And I missed that. Nonetheless, personalization as a service isn't done well most of anywhere. Now, the issue is, where does the data come from? Is it GDPR compliant? Do you have permission to do this?
The way they describe it, you provide the data. They're just providing the hardware. Right.
They're providing the hardware and the ML.
Yeah.
That backs it up, which is
you create a schema describing your data set. You create a data set group for building the model. You send the data to Personalize. It then creates a solution and a campaign. Here's Amazon Polly. Explain.
Do we know about Polly?
Yes, Polly's been there forever.
From last year. It's been out for a while. Yeah.
Well, what is the, let me play this.
Using
I don't know
it to read this stuff.
Listen.
Yeah.
Amazon Personalize, real-time personalization and recommendation for everyone.
It sounds a little bit like
machine
you.
Learning
I think you're
definitely
replaced.
Offers a wide range of exciting topics to work on.
He's not as happy as
it's just doing. Announcer voice. That's all it is. Yes. I can do that too. Amazon Personalize, but I can't do it as cheaply as Polly.
Yeah, exactly.
I expected Polly to have a female voice. I must confess.
Well, go to Polly. Go to that link on Polly.
Yeah. Here you want Joanna?
Hello. Do you speak a foreign language?
No.
One language is never enough.
Never. Thanks.
Vitaya in Danish,
I just get insulted by a robot?
Yes, and you took it. You took it. So this is, but I don't think this is as good as Google's voices, to be honest.
No, and Google has so many.
I want to hear
color coded.
Let's hear the French one.
Bonjour. Parlez-vous une autre langue que le français? Une langue n'est jamais assez.
She's going to scold me.
She sounds
It does sound more condescending in French.
Everything sounds more condescending in French. And then, well,
meanwhile, your little robot is lonely.
She's exploring. He or it is it. They are exploring. Amazon gets into the blockchain. They said they never do it, but they're to do. Yes, they said last year. They said we're not going to do a blockchain, but today. According to TechCrunch, the company announced a new service called Amazon Quantum Ledger Database, QLDB, which is a fully managed ledger database with a central trusted authority. I thought the whole point of blockchain was decentral, but okay.
You can have it two ways. One of the services that supports QLDB is their managed blockchain service.
The thing is, it's immutable, append only, tracks a history of all changes, cryptographically chained and verifiable. And that's really kind of, I think, the key to blockchain, right, and all of that. It doesn't have to be decentralized. It also announced a managed blockchain service. It'll be really scalable, says AWS CEO Andy Jassy. Okay. That's not all. It's all just all I understand. And some of that I don't really even understand.
Wait, we haven't talked about the fish yet.
Big Mouth Billy Bass. Did they announce that today?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. It was on the list of stories.
The fish is on the list?
Yeah.
Your fish is on my list. Your fish is on my list. I ordered one immediately, but we've disappointed to learn that the Big Mouth. It was a meme, wasn't it, Karsten? We saw a video of it, and it was fake.
Yes. No, it was a hack. Someone had hacked, basically just hacked the voice recognition of an old school Big Mouth Billy Bass.
Which would have been better.
To speak when spoke.
So now they have an echo. It's basically an echo speaker that's a Billy Bass.
With a moving mouth.
With lip sync.
Yes.
Yeah, it's called the Big Mouth Billy Bass with a $39.99 pre-order, delivers December 1st, or released December 1st. But if you look more closely, you have to pair an existing Amazon Echo device to that as a Bluetooth speaker, and then it will sing to you.
And I don't know why they did it this way, because Amazon in September introduced something called ACK, Connect Kit. And with that, what you could do is pop that module in, and it would have actually, if it had a mic in it, so you would have to have a mic in the Billy Bass, not just a speaker, it would become, you could talk to it, and it would be a standalone Echo device.
Wouldn't that increase the cost to about $100, though?
I don't know.
Sure. I've got lots of
I mean, they're selling a dot for $25.
Everyone's favorite talking and singing fish now responds to Amazon Alexa voice commands. Just pair Big Mouth Billy Bass with your preferred device in the Amazon Echo family and let the fun begin. Billy lip syncs with
Alexa thought this would be
as she
back.
Responds to inquiries, reacts to
I don't
to timers,
understand why it happened in the first
and
place.
Alarms, and dances to the beat with Amazon
don't
music.
Worry, be happy,
Big Mouth
right?
Billy Bass automatically updates with Alexa upgrades, so he always
has
the most
current he's not
capabilities.
It's
Big
so
Mouth
weird.
Billy Bass, he's back and better than ever.
Where'd he go?
Where'd he go? They stopped making them. It was a fad, Jeff.
Oh, were you giving you these could only find them at the
So next we're going to have the pet rock with.
Yeah, well, let's start thinking. You could have.
I have one of those.
Those speak and spells with. You could have one of the pull string dollies with. You could just go on and on and on. Teddy Ruxpin will be back next.
Teddy
year.
Ruxpin, yeah, that's right.
Hello.
So the Billy Bass, you're right. So this thing uses something called a. Gadgets, and it's the gadget kit, and basically it turns any sort of thing. It gives it the ability to talk to and recognize, like do notifications and help you with anything that you can tie to Alexa. So that's if you want to build your own.
That's what. So you could take a Big Mouth Billy Bass and put a Raspberry Pi behind it or something, and have it and put the Amazon Echo voice services on it. And then it would just, right?
I don't know how the lip sync.
Or, something cheap, but I don't know how the lip sync works. So Arduino will work with the Amazon voice services kit? Gadget?
Yeah, not the gadget kit. So the gadget kit is different than Connect Kit. Connect Kit is just the Wi-Fi and a link back to the IoT core hub, whatever Amazon calls their IoT service.
How do you get the lip sync to work?
I don't know. I can only go so far, Leo.
You can only do so much. It's time for you guys to do some heavy lifting. All right, we're going to take a break, and then I'll do some heavy lifting. Poor
Stacey. Is there Google news to talk about?
Yeah. Have we covered, is there anything else that the Amazon reInvent announced that we have missed? Probably.
Oh, yes, but for sure.
For sure. But nothing else that we have to know about today.
No, because you guys gave me my ARM servers, so thank you all.
ARM servers.
You're welcome.
And that'll be ARM servers on AWS, so you could use ARM.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, wait, I lied to you. Amazon, do you care about their Cyber Monday press release that was basically we sold a butt ton of devices?
We're going to get to that. I don't consider that reInvent news. That's just general Amazon we have.
Oh, that's the other line of business they have.
Yeah, another thing we do, selling stuff. Remember that? And we'll talk about the Day One Fund and the Black Friday protest. There's other Amazon news, that's for sure, but... take a deep breath. I want to talk about WordPress, which is blogging as a service. Blah. Actually, it's the best way. I think blogging is really not, is a small fraction of what you can do with WordPress.com. That's what I do with it and have done for more than a decade. But WordPress.com really is about making a website that reflects your company's brand, your aesthetic, a place for teenagers to put their best work so that when people Google their name, their WordPress.com site shows up, not that video that their enemy shot of them in the back rooms at the school smoking cigarettes or whatever. You want to control your reputation on the web, whether you're a teenager, an adult, or a business. You got to have a home on the web. I mean, it's just that simple. Everybody needs a website, and WordPress is the easiest place to do it. I have to say, WordPress.com takes care of all the boring stuff, the hosting, the security, the software updates. You focus on what you do best, your stuff, your content. You could choose from hundreds of designs to match your vision, establish your brand, no matter how much design experience you have. At WordPress.com, it's my home on the net. You can have a Facebook page. You can have an Instagram account. You can have a Twitter account. But you don't own any of those. You own your WordPress site. You upload images, video, and audio to the WordPress site. Ever since I closed my social media, that's where I put all my stuff. And, unlike posting it on somebody else's site, you never lose control of it. You can export content to and import to your WordPress site, export from it. It's your site. It's your home. It's your content. You own it. That's so important to me. Everybody at least has to have a website. You know, if a baby's born, you've got friends in the family who just had a baby, get them a WordPress site with the baby's name. Set that up. That's something that kid will grow up with. And 20 years from now, will take over, and that will have been their thing, their site. What a great gift that would be. Grow your audience. If you're a business, you'll reach new customers. Built-in search engine optimization, so you show up at the top of Google. Social media features, so your customers, your readers, can share your content, your business, on their Facebook site, on their Twitter page, on their Instagram. Marketing tools that'll help you grow. And with the WordPress app, I love the WordPress app, iOS or Android. Actually, it's on desktops, too. You can manage your site on the go. I used it to post as I was traveling around Europe, but I also used it to approve comments, check viewer stats, things like that. Of course, the best part about WordPress is 24/7 support. It's there when you need it, and a price that is right, as little as $4 a month. I think it's a $100 business plan. I love it. It is awesome. 32% of all the websites in the world run on WordPress. Find out why. Go to WordPress.com/twig. Get 15% off any new plan purchase. WordPress.com/twig. Create your beautiful, fantastic, wonderful site. WordPress.com/twig to get 15% off.
Have you played with Gutenberg yet, Leo?
I use it. That's the new editing platform for content that create on your WordPress site. And I like it. I know it's been a little bit, this is my WordPress site. It's been a little controversial, but
I haven't tried it yet.
Yeah, it's great.
I mean, how is it controversial?
Oh, because if you change, that guy just almost walked off the table, but he didn't. If you change your anything anywhere on the web, it's controversial, right?
Yes, exactly.
Nobody will be happy.
I like it the old stick shift way. What is this automatic transmission thing? I want a double clutch.
Yeah. I'll log in and show you, but I use the app, so I don't really see it that much, but if you want to post on the WordPress site, you'll see Gutenberg.
I just need
you just like the name. I know. Yeah. You just like the name. That's the real reason. it's fine. I really like the back end on WordPress. But like I said, I've been using it for more than a decade. I'm so comfortable with it. It's just natural, just easy for me. I think that's really the secret to the whole thing.
It's a lot better than Blogger.
God, we've come a long way, haven't we?
Wow.
I used so many platforms when I first started out. There was one called Gray Matter. Then remember Type? What was it? Type.
TypePad.
TypePad.
And then there was Dave Weiner's.
I never used Frontier.
Frontier, right.
Although the principle is very, very cool. I did use TypePad, and then they had Vox. They created Vox. That was an example of, I did not own that site, because when Vox went out of business, I lost a lot of my images. I was able to get the text out, but those images were hosted on Vox. See, that's why I really like the idea of, I back up regularly. My WordPress site is always safe on my hard drives as well as on their servers. So, and they make that very easy to do. Let's talk about Cyber Monday. Silly name. The premise used to be that everybody would wait to shop online until they were at work where they had fast internet connections. Now most people have faster internet connections at home. In fact, billions of dollars in goods sold Thanksgiving Day.
So Amazon came up with a new thing, but I don't know if we should talk about it yet. I told Jeff
because
I
was making fun of it.
What is it?
They're calling it the Turkey Five.
Oh,
a name I refuse to condone.
No,
the it's five. Like naming storms that aren't hurricanes. Yeah.
The five shopping days that start with Thanksgiving and continue through Cyber Monday broke records.
Which I say.
U.S. consumers bought millions more products over that period compared with that period last year. 18 million, this is all from Amazon, 18 million toys on Black Friday, 13 million fashion, oh, I'm sorry, Black Friday and Cyber Monday combined, 13 million fashion items. Sales, this is Amazon's information. The other one to look at, of course, Adobe Analytics. They have global information. The shopping event, Cyber Monday, for Amazon anyway, was the biggest shopping day in the company's history. They sold more stuff Monday than they did on Black Friday or even on Prime Day.
I wonder how that compares to Alibaba or Baidu on Singles Day. And I wish that, I mean, Amazon's, their press releases are just pointless in the sense that there's no real data to be had there. But that's, if I could find out, that's the question I have.
I think we could probably find out. Let's see. According to Adobe, Cyber Monday sales were 7.9 billion online. That is, I think, a fraction of Singles Day. Yeah, 30 billion on Singles Day for Alibaba. So one merchant in China, Alibaba, sold more on one day than all merchants, three times more in one day than all merchants in the U.S. or worldwide, I guess. I don't know. Cyber Monday is a global phenomenon, right? Foot traffic at some malls and stores was down over the holiday weekend. That's because more and more people are shopping online. It's a 19% increase year over year for Cyber Monday. Black Friday, $6.22 billion. Again, this is not just Amazon. This is all online. But the weirdest thing that to me was that online sales on Thanksgiving Day were $3.7 billion. $1 billion of it from phones. So what's the scenario? You go to the families to have turkey. You're bored to tears. You sneak off in a corner while Uncle Joe's snoring on the Barca lounger and the football game's on, and you buy some stuff?
Yep. It's the new cigarette break.
It's cigarette break. Smoke. Amazon break.
Or if you're Leo Laporte, you get excited and say, I have to buy that fish now.
Well, this is why I'm an outlier because my sales, the line of sales doesn't really peak at any point. It just continues solid buzz.
Well, the other interesting thing about this is the first Christmas without Toys R Us.
So I put it on the rundown chat. Amazon said it sold 18 million toys between Thanksgiving and Cyber Monday.
Yeah.
It had been stockpiling toys since Toys R Us closed.
Guess who put Toys R Us out of business?
Yeah.
Well, Toys R Us.
Equity firm
and, and Walmart. And
loaded them up with debt.
Yeah. It wasn't Amazon, actually. But they're certainly reaping the benefit of it. Wow. Kohl's had a record day for digital sales on Thanksgiving. Walmart and Target also strong online sales. Some customers, a lot of customers, opting to buy online and pick up in store. I never will understand that, but you see these ads all the time for Walmart.
Because you don't pay for shipping then.
And you get it that day.
You get it that day, right. Yeah. It's just a way to reserve something.
Yeah. Is that online sales? Do they count that?
I think so.
Mm. Anyway, it was, you know, I guess... If honestly, if you want to say how strong the economy is, this is the best way to, the best stat to quote. If people are confident they're going to buy more, and we're seeing massive increases year over year from last year in online sales. Thursday was the first day in 2018, all of the year, to see $1 billion in sales from smartphones, according to Adobe. Shoppers spent 8% more online on Thanksgiving Day compared to a year ago, growth of 8%. So I think that's one of the stories. Black Friday is not the only day anymore. It is the Turkey Five.
How did Adobe end up in the shopping data?
I don't know, but this is the big, you know, of the last few years, it's Adobe Analytics every time.
That's true.
It's a weird new business for them, relatively new. I there's really nothing to say about that. It's just, I think it's fascinating.
I think it's a fun, I mean, it's better connectivity, it's mobile phones, it's the ability to buy things. And I don't know about you guys, but the number of pitches from companies and number of emails I got related to sales in the preceding week were just obscene.
Me too.
So.
Meanwhile, Amazon workers went on strike on Black Friday. We are not robots. Unions for the warehouse employees called working conditions inhuman. Amazon disagrees. This was particularly big in those communist countries of UK, Spain, Italy, and Germany.
We are not robots.
We are not. We are not. We are not. Actually, that they may regret saying that. We could be robots. Honest. I'm sure they'll be replaced by robots. So it wasn't mass protests. Union officials said they expected about 2,600 workers would show up. So, but it got some news. It got some airtime. I think we have now literally tapped all of the Amazon.
Amazon Day is over.
Amazon
the Turkey Day is dead.
It is. Turkey Five are done.
They said they sold out of Echo Dots.
Sold out. Wow.
Well, I don't know if that's true, though. Can I buy one right now?
I bet you could. They're making them fast. People are saying that the new Echo Dots sound really good. They do.
I actually was going to buy a new Echo Dot to replace my other one. And then I realized I had a Google Hub, so I just used that.
I have so many Echo Dots. I don't want to replace them. But mostly now I use them because they're so tinny. I use them just play to something else. Maybe my Big Mouth Billy Bass when time comes.
Yeah, the new ones right now, instead of they're $30 instead of they were $25. So, you know, pricey.
Are we done with Amazon?
Yep.
I think there's big news around Google Fi.
I think this is good news, but I think I'm going to save it for the changelog.
Sorry about that. Okay, never mind.
No, that's okay. But
No.
We step on your stuff all the time.
No. The changelog is a little bit sparse today, so.
Yeah, I need everything I can I can get.
I need all the changes I can get.
We talked about this on This Week in Tech on Sunday, but I brought it up to you guys, and I don't know what you think about it. Washington, according to the Wall Street Journal, and they don't say who in Washington, the U.S. government So this could be intelligence agencies. It could be the White House. It could be the Commerce Department. I don't know. Has initiated an extraordinary, for all I know, it could be Brett Kavanaugh. I don't know. Has initiated an extraordinary outreach campaign to foreign allies, says the Journal, trying to persuade wireless and internet providers in these countries to avoid telecommunications equipment from Huawei. They're going to Germany, Italy, and Japan. Although the Italian response was, yeah, well, we don't like to use Huawei, but there's not really anything else. We cannot ignore Huawei because they're a leading telecom equipment provider worldwide, and it's a very tough call, said one Italian official. So you remember in 2012, Congress put out a warning that Chinese networking gear might not be safe to use. Last year, the Commerce Department said, we warned us about Huawei, ZTE, both Chinese companies that have some connection to the Chinese military. Huawei, in particular, was founded by a former Chinese military officer. Huawei is the number two phone manufacturer in the world after Samsung, the number one networking gear manufacturer in the world. And they are the number one, by far, maker of 5G networking gear. The fear, according to the Journal, and I think it's a reasonable fear, is that Chinese telecom equipment used in the United States or our allies could be used, A, to spy on companies either for industrial espionage or military espionage, and B, could have a kill switch built in, and as part of a cyber attack or a cyber war, could be used to shut down the networks and disable the information networks in these countries. The U.S. is considering thinking about increasing financial aid for telecommunications development in countries that shun Chinese-made equipment. And of course, maybe U.S. companies too, but that's the problem.
Yeah, so there's only like four of those.
Right.
There's Cisco, is it Ericsson?
Ericsson and Nokia are big players in this. They could.
Is Nokia still its own company? I can never remember. Like, there was Alcatel-Lucent, but that got bought. And
It's listed as Nokia, but who actually owns it? I don't know.
No, it's probably, then it's still Nokia. Yeah there's like Cisco, Nokia, and Ericsson.
Right. Yeah, that's it. And Huawei, but Huawei's number one. What do you think? Now, see, on the one hand, I because they don't say which government officials, this could easily be a campaign on the part of the administration as part of a trade war with China.
So I feel like our administration has lost so much credibility. I can't tell if this is like part of like the crazy Trump China thing that he's got, or if this is legit. Huawei has had this complaint lodged against it for years, and they have, up until now, it's been just a complaint. So it's unclear to me if anything, like if they found material information and then something's really changed, or if this is just more, this is an escalation of that rhetoric.
And it's we could be quick to point out there's a ton of gear made by other Chinese companies that's in the market today. And there's even more stuff made by U.S. companies in China, including the iPhone. So I don't know where you find this made in America, built in America, safe to use stuff. And by the way, one can also, this is a trade war. I mean, I'm sure that there are legitimate security issues, but it is a trade war because, of course, what's the response from China? Well, don't buy American equipment. And
Trump threatened.
Wouldn't be wrong to say that.
Yes, and Trump threatened a 10% tariff on iPhones. What does that mean politically?
That is not a political smart move, but
that was just strange.
I think part of the problem in that case is that the president doesn't really understand that tariffs don't
taxes.
They don't mean money in the pocket of the consumer. They mean money out of the pocket of consumers. I don't think he understands that, but that's neither here nor there.
We could spend the whole show trying to figure out what Trump does and does not understand.
Yeah.
I'm like, let's not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've seen a number of statements from the administration, not just the president, but others in the administration that really imply they don't get it. That, oh, a tariff, that balances our trade. You know, we take that money and now we have a trade balance. No, that's not how it works.
Economics is hard. They call it the dismal science for a reason.
But he said today he has a better gut than brain.
If you've seen the junk food he eats, I will grant you that. So it's unfortunate because you're right. We live in an age where there actually probably are legitimate security threats.
There's certainly a reason to worry.
Yeah.
Or there's a reason to investigate. Let me rephrase that.
But there's some doubt cast on this because of the political environment.
Yes. I mean, maybe they really did find something and that would be really worth knowing.
Right.
But
That's I think what needs to go. If you're going to talk about if you're going to castigate Bloomberg for its super micro story, this is even more so. I'd love to see the evidence. And I do think that if Huawei were doing this, that there would be some physical or software evidence.
Yeah, you would have to see it in the code.
Yeah.
I mean, when Verizon and AT&T buy this gear, they test the heck out of it. And they test the heck out of it with the vendors. So, like, I've been inside test facilities for these guys. And this is, like, years-long efforts in... I feel like, especially a company like AT&T, which is like right next to the U.S. government and cozy, they're not going to screw this over. I don't actually know if they're using Huawei equipment, though. So
they likely are. Australia has banned Huawei and ZTE from its 5G networks. In October, UK authorities say they were reviewing the makeup of its telecom equipment. New Zealand has blocked Huawei imports over a significant security risk. So it's my guess there is a smoking gun. This is why I don't ever like to talk to PR people. I met and talked to for some time the VP of Public Relations for Huawei Devices US.
Oh, Bill.
No, it's a woman.
Oh, okay. It used to be a man.
Bill's corporate, I think.
Oh, okay.
She's Huawei Devices US. So anyway, she said, I felt bad because I had a P20, which is a really nice phone, and then she had the brand new Huawei Mate 20, which is gorgeous, the most beautiful phone you've ever seen. Really an amazing phone, which you can't get in the U.S. The only country in the world you can't get either of these because, and you probably remember this last year at CES, Verizon and AT&T pre-announced they were going to carry these phones. Then were told by the U.S. government it would be a bad idea. They pulled it. And you remember the Huawei guy coming on stage at CES being livid because it basically destroyed their plans to sell the phone in the U.S. As she told me, we just don't want to spend marketing money in the U.S. selling something if it doesn't have a carrier contract, because that's how phones are sold in the U.S. Without a carrier relationship, you're just not going to sell it. So they yanked the phone, but they still sell their laptop. Their Huawei MateBook laptop is a gorgeous laptop, a really nice laptop. I was playing with it for a while.
So right after that, or soon after that, January 16th, 2018, there's a Reuters story by a different reporter, almost the same headline, except this one cites two congressional aides. So knowing that that's the source, that feels much more politically motivated.
Right.
Although they cite national security concerns.
Well, it's completely legitimate. If that's the case, it's a challenge to come up with something that doesn't have a national security concern, because we don't make this stuff here in the U.S. very much anymore. I guess you could trust the Swedish company, Ericsson, and the Finnish company, Ericsson, and the Swedish company. No, wait a minute. Nokia.
Nokia.
Nokia is Finnish.
Nokia is Finnish, and so is Ericsson is Swedish.
Oh, it's Swedish now? Okay.
It's based in Stockholm, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think so, yes.
It used to be in Espoo. I thought.
No, that was Nokia.
That was Nokia. Okay.
Nokia is headquartered in Espoo.
So.
Sorry.
Never second guess Stacey Higginbotham.
No. Ooh. I remember having to write Espoo-based Nokia when I was writing about handsets for the 20 seconds that I wrote about handsets.
All right. So there you go. I keep bringing this story up and nobody seems to really have.
If I had the smoking gun, Leo, I would tell you.
I want the smoking gun.
So, Leo, have you made a reservation using Duplex?
No, have you?
Well, so I just was trying to. I was turning down the mic and trying to do it. So you go to Assistant
on your Pixel.
See, it's only available in certain markets.
Well, no, they've expanded it. So I went to my Pixel. Okay. I went to Assistant. I asked for a certain restaurant, and then it had the button you want, which is make a reservation. Then it said, guess what? You can't do that with this account. But you might be able to do it.
So how should I? So I should say.
So go to Assistant. Go to Assistant. Ask for a restaurant. You know, one you know that takes
reservation. Make a reservation in San Francisco.
No, what I would do is ask for a specific restaurant, because then you're going to have a the restaurant box, and below that it's going to ask you, do you want to make a reservation at this restaurant? So plug one of your favorite restaurants.
Make a reservation at Kokari Restaurant, San Francisco.
It may not give you the box. It may.
Kokari Estiatorio. For how many?
Two people.
Okay, for two people. For when?
Tomorrow.
Got it. At what time?
But what if I don't really want a reservation?
You can cancel it. You can cancel it. Just keep going.
Okay, what's the phone number for this booking?
It's going to do it. I don't know what the phone... Oh, my phone
number. It's your phone number. Oh. Say this number.
What time?
6 p.m.
I couldn't find any tables around 6 p.m. Please try again.
So it's just using OpenTable or something.
It's using OpenTable in that case.
So but what you wanted to do is make a call for you.
Yes.
Right. You got to find a restaurant that doesn't use OpenTable. It's still pretty cool, although that's kind of a long process. It's actually not a great voice first use case.
Yeah, that I had. Well, I guess I could, though. Let's try this. Make a restaurant.
I thought you were an announcer for a living.
Yeah, Google. Hey, Googly. Google. Make a reservation for a party of two, 7 p.m. at Acarello Restaurant, San Francisco.
While I can't make reservations at that particular restaurant, here's their phone number.
209. No. Does anybody know a restaurant in San Francisco that's not on OpenTable? Good luck finding that. Anyway.
What about Petaluma?
No. All right.
I'll bet they don't have OpenTable.
Make a restaurant reservation for The Shuckery, Petaluma, tomorrow at 7 p.m. Table for two.
Got it. Let's make a reservation with OpenTable for 7 p.m.
No! No! No!
I'll see you at the Shuckery tomorrow at 7, Leo.
I just made a reservation.
It'll be a fine birthday dinner for you.
No, I don't want it. So that's, okay. So what we're trying to get to is that Google Duplex thing that they demonstrated at Google I.O. where that semi-human sounding voice will make a reservation for you on the phone. Here. Let's VentureBeat did it, and we can play their video.
Make a restaurant reservation.
Okay, I found some choices. Which place do you want?
Cafe Istanbul.
That's what I should have got.
Sounds good. I'll call to make a reservation at Cafe Istanbul.
Ooh.
How many?
I wish you could listen.
Two people.
Maybe you do. I don't know.
Okay, maybe you can.
Two people. For when?
Friday.
I presume you can jam all that information together just to save time.
7 p.m.
Sounds good.
More fun.
7 p.m. on Friday. Just in case that's not available, can I try between 7 p.m. and 8 p.m.?
Yes.
Got it. For 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. I have a phone number here ending in 8321. Can I use that to book the reservation?
Yes.
This is a lot slower and more painful than just doing it.
Okay, right? I'll book it under Kyle with the phone number ending in 8321. Should I try to book?
Yes.
Imagine you're driving, Leo.
Okay.
All right, I'll try calling them now and update you within the next 15 minutes. You can always ask me about your reservation.
Now, I wonder how Cafe Istanbul feels when this thing calls them.
Business.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Well, maybe the reporter called them and asked them.
Yeah. Apparently not. Because that video just ended. A spokesperson confirmed to VentureBeat that Duplex has expanded from, quote, a set of trusted users, quote, end quote,
to us untrusted
to
users,
a small group of Google Pixel phone owners who can now use Duplex via the assistant to secure restaurant reservations in select cities. Presumably,
I can't do it because I have a Google G Suites account.
Oh, yeah, neither can Mr. J. New York, Atlanta, Phoenix, San Francisco. If you're not in the trusted tester group, you'll likely get an error along the lines of, sorry, I can't call to make reservations for you yet, but here's their phone number. Okay.
All right, we tried.
So maybe you're just not in the group?
Well, I didn't know because I didn't get to a restaurant that didn't have other ways to do it. Maybe, I don't know. Should I try Cafe Istanbul?
Sure, I'm sure they're getting lots of reservations.
Make a reservation for Cafe Istanbul tomorrow night, 7 p.m., party of two.
Here it is, Kitchen Istanbul.
That's all they gave me. Here it is. Maybe I'm not.
Do you have someplace closer to you called Kitchen Istanbul?
I don't even know.
Than Cafe Istanbul?
I don't know where this is.
How many Turkish restaurants are there out there?
Istanbul was Constantinople.
Oh, it's called Kitchen Istanbul.
No, that's it's in San Francisco. Maybe it's not Cafe Istanbul.
Wait, it says Cafe Istanbul is closed, like permanently.
I give up.
It's a ghost restaurant, and they're making calls to it from a ghost. All right, let's take a break. I want to do the change log. I can't hold it any longer, my friends. So right after this,
you're bursting with changelog.
I'm bursting with changelog news. Good spirits of changelog tide. But first, a word about privacy.com. I love to use privacy. In fact, I'm going back now through previous charges online and replacing my regular credit card on those systems with a privacy card. And I'll tell you why. Privacy is the only card I use online. It's free, used by 400,000 users, and what it is, it's a credit card, it's a Visa card, but it's tied to your debit or checking account. But here's the best part. Once you use a privacy card at any individual merchant's, it's locked to that merchant. No one else can use that card. So if that card is stolen, no big deal. If the number is exfiltrated, as it were, and we know breaches happen, no big deal. Nobody else can use it. You can when you create. In fact, let me create a new card just to show you the process. It's really easy. You can nickname the card. I'm going to make this be for a. Let's see, who do I want to replace? Oh, I know what I need to do. I think my subscription for the Wall Street Journal ran out. So Wall Street Journal. So you nickname the card. It will suggest a logo if it's something that it knows, but it doesn't. You don't have to have a logo. Who cares? You can set a spend limit. So I know that subscription is not going to cost me more than $100 a month. Or I could say per charge, or I could say per year or total. So you could say, you know what? This is going to be used, and it's going to be used once for $100 and never again. Or there's no limit at all. There is a single use button if you want to click that. It'll also say it can only be used once for this amount. And then you create a card. Now, I am going to show you this card because you can't use it. Ha, 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 ha. Actually, I better kill that card right now. So there's a number. There's a. By the way, I love this part. It gives you expiration date that's 5 years in the future, which is great. So you don't have to worry about it for 5 years. But here's the best part. I'm going to trash this card right now. Watch. So don't try to use it. That's gone. So that card you saw, it's gone. This is the one I created last time, unnamed burner. But I use it for Hulu. I use it for subscriptions. I use it for everything because you never have to worry about a subscription going on and on and on and on. You can pause, freeze, or delete the card at any time. It's no longer good. They're PCI DSS compliant. That's the same security standards as your bank. All your information is secured using military-grade encryption. Split key encryption with partial keys held by separate employees, kind of like in war games, so no single person at privacy can access the data. The cards let you use, I love this, any billing info you like. So if you want to use a card and not give the merchant your address or zip code, use whatever you want. Privacy will approve the charge, but the merchant will not get your address or your zip code. They also support two-factor, which, of course, I use to log in. Now, I am sorry to say it's only available in the U.S. right now. It costs you nothing to use, because, of course, like any credit card, they make money from their merchants. They won't sell your information. There are no hidden fees. I love it that subscriptions, you know, are now in my command. There's a browser extension in the Chrome Web Store you can use. They have an Android or iOS app. You saw how easy it was to create an app on the website as well. You link your virtual cards to your U.S. checking account or your debit card account. So it's not a charge card. There's no interest. It takes the money out of your account right away. That's something you should be aware of. But, oh, man, I love this. You don't ever have to worry about being billed twice or upgraded without your consent. You can totally send a limit. And, in fact, if the merchant gets hacked, you'll probably know before they do because you'll get that decline email or push notification. I have those turned on. The minute somebody tries to use that card somewhere else, privacy says, that's the card you linked to Amazon. Somebody's trying to use it at Walmart. And it'll decline it, of course. So you never have to worry. This is the only card I use online now. And it's definitely the only card I use for subscriptions. I didn't even mention you can get cash back, up to 5% cash back. This is such a great solution. I don't know why everybody's not using it. Privacy.com. There's no cost to you. It keeps your money safe. And you have total control over that credit card. I literally use it now almost exclusively. And as I said, I'm going back to all my online accounts and replacing the real credit card that they have with my privacy card. It's that good. Privacy.com. Oh, if you go to, I should give you one more little treat just for the holidays. Privacy.com/twig. That way they know you saw it here on This Week in Google, and you'll get a $5 credit on your first purchase. I know it's not a huge amount. It's just a little something to thank you. Privacy.com/twig. I'm a big fan. It was inevitable. Price comparison sites are now complaining to the EU that Google is flouting the EU competition rules, favoring their sites. This is an ongoing battle. This is the one, isn't the one Google lost for the 2.4 billion euro fine? And now,
I believe so.
Yeah, and now 14 rivals have sent a letter to the European Commissioner for Compensation, Competition, Margarete Vestager, saying, "Hey, they're not complying with your order."
We come back to the problem. Some of these things can be decent comparison sites, and some of them can be crap sites that are just link farms.
Yeah,
and so who's to judge? I have long argued that Google should have a jury of business peers to judge rather than themselves, since Google has the power of God in these cases.
Yeah. Foundum, which is the company that originally brought the complaint against Google in 2010, is one of those 14 sites.
I'm trying to find the others in the letter. Well, there we go.
AchetezMoinsCher.com. Price Runner. Idealo.
Comparado.
If Google fails to comply with the commission's decision, it'd be liable for non-compliance payments of up to 5% of the average daily worldwide revenue of Alphabet, backdated to the start of non-compliance. 5% of revenue.
I thought it was only 4%. This is under a court thing, not GDPR.
This is also a penalty, right? 5% of revenue. That's some money.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
I don't know. I would not want that.
So this is, I guess they did record, I'm sorry, going back to this Duplex thing. Here is audio of Google Duplex making a restaurant reservation from VentureBeat. I don't know if this is from the Google I.O. demo. No, this is new. This is real.
Hello, Cafe Prague.
Hi, I'm going to make a reservation for a client. I've gone from Google, so the call may be recorded. Can I book a table for tomorrow, please?
Oh, yeah. I like that Irish accent. That adds a certain verisimilitude.
How did it identify itself again?
I'm calling from Google, so I may be this call may be recorded.
Oh. So it didn't say, it says, I am calling on behalf of a robot. Client. Right.
But it did say, I'm calling on behalf of a client. I'm calling from Google. But it didn't say I'm a robot. But that's all right. What are we?
Yes. At what time would you like to reserve?
At 7 p.m.
Okay, perfect. How many people?
It's for 2 people.
Okay, 2 people tomorrow at 7 p.m. What's your name?
The first name is Anna.
Anna. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
I'll see you tomorrow. Thank you.
Doesn't sound like Anna.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
It's pretty realistic.
It is.
That's pretty good.
And there were no ahs.
But there were pauses. There were pauses. And I like, I mean, some of this kind of off, thrown away, like, okay, I thought that was quite good.
And she had an accent, which would be perfect.
Yeah.
Not a very heavy one, but
so
a rather charming accent.
In that recording, which was an actual call that, you know, I guess they ran over to the restaurant and said, hey, Google's going to call you. Let's record. In the call we recorded, says VentureBeat, the wording has changed from the original duplex ad of last year, removing the part that makes it crystal clear it's not a human calling. This is what it said. Hi, I'm calling to make a reservation for a client. I'm calling from Google so the call may be recorded. That actually might have been a human operator. So this is an update that, wow, this is interesting. VentureBeat just put out an update. At this stage, some duplex calls are made using Google's automated system. Others are conducted using human operators.
Oh, this is like Facebook's M. And remember you will never how know. Poorly that went.
The former announced that they are automated up front. So this was a real person. We were fooled by the fooling.
Oh,
human operators don't say that. They just say they're calling from Google.
Hi, Mom. I have a job at Google. Great. Are you going to make weapons? No, I'm just going to call and make reservations.
So that was a human. Well,
that's no fun.
What a waste of time.
You don't like humans.
Edit this out.
Humans.
We know what humans.
We've seen humans do act as assistants for years.
There's nothing special about that. I don't want a human to make fun. Have you now read the many reviews of the Slate Jeff Jarvis? And are you thinking about it? All right. Dieter Bone had one.
Kevin wants you to read his because he feels that most of them hated it, but they were not actual Chromebook users. That is all I have to say. He spent a large portion of time talking to me about it this morning.
What's his site? All Chromebooks?
About Chromebooks.
So, Kevin's a better, because the complaint almost all of the reviews I read were not about the hardware. They were about basically Chrome OS and often about Android on Chrome OS.
Which is I've complained about too.
Yeah. And you can't blame them. Pixel Slate and Pixel Slate Keyboard Review, Portability and Productivity at a Premium Price, Kevin Toefel, writing in aboutchromebooks.com. He says the Pixel Slate is a peak expression of the Chrome OS tablet, a powerful thin tablet for portability and content consumption in a relaxed environment, but all of the productivity of a full desktop Chromebook with a detachable keyboard. He said there's a price to pay for premium design and performance. Yeah, literally. The model I recommend, it looks like that Kevin got, is the i5 configuration, which has 8 gigs of RAM and 128 gigs of eMMC storage. That is probably the sweet spot. You can get an i7, you can spend more money, but I'm not sure that's really worth it. I wouldn't go too much lighter than that. Those are pretty low-powered processors. This i5 is a Y-series processor, so even it isn't super fast. I do love the screen resolution, 3,000 by 2,000. It's UHD 615 graphics from Intel, shared memory. He says you don't sacrifice on performance, which I would say makes sense. He compares it in performance to a Pixelbook and to a Chromebook Spin. And the Spin is the winner in every case, almost every case.
Mm.
But it is significantly faster than last year's Pixelbook. So as Pixelbook users, Jeff, you and I, we might be interested just for the upgrade in performance. The only place looks like the Pixel Slate was faster than the Chromebook Spin from Acer was the Basemark benchmark. And everything else, Speedometer 1 and 2, Jetstream and Octane, the Chromebook Spin was faster. It's a premium priced, but it's less expensive, I think, for than the Slate for what you get.
What's the price of the Chromebook, of the
Spin? Acer? I think it's $700 or $800.
Okay.
He has his review of the Spin as well. But the Spin isn't a tablet. It's a 2-in-1. You know, it's one of those foldable things.
It's a 2-in-1. I can't contribute with Chromebook stats, so I'll sing a song. Sorry.
You have a nice voice. Keep going. Sing the Eyes of Texas are upon you.
Yeah, okay.
Now, I wonder, did Kevin say whether he prefers the Google keyboard or the Bridge keyboard? Because the Bridge is $50 cheaper.
I don't know.
Did he order both? I think he just ordered the Google keyboard.
I'd recommend. He says,
you know what? He's going to be on the show next week, I think, right? So you can ask him.
He says that one annoyance, and I think Dieter Bone said this as well on The Verge, of the Google keyboard is it's kind of sloppy and floppy. And Dieter said, unless you have a really solid flat surface, it's going to give and a little bit. Kevin says carrying the slate with the keyboard cover, which is a folio style. It goes over the front and the back, has a little movement as well. Some keyboard wobble when you type, but also movement as you carry it. It's a minor annoyance at best to me, writes Kevin, but others may really dislike it. If you don't like it, the Bridge, he doesn't have it, but the Bridge is another option. I really like this, the circular keys, and I do like the fact that it's backlit. That's something that Apple's keyboard folio is not, and I find that a big annoyance for the iPod, the iPad Pros.
Well, so I'm forgetting now. I got so confused. The other differences between the Google keyboard and the Bridge keyboard?
I don't know if the Bridge keyboard has a fingerprint reader. The Google keyboard does. Or maybe that's on the on-off switch. I'm sorry. I guess that's on the slate itself. Battery life is good. Camera app is from Android. No headphone jack. And I know Dieter Bone had problems with the Bluetooth dropping out on his slate.
But it has a Pixel C jack.
Yeah. Both Kevin.
A USB-C. Arrived today, a USB headset.
Oh, good. There you go.
USB-C.
Is it good? Which one did you buy?
Yeah, it's good. Oh. I forget.
Google ships one with its Pixel 3 that's pretty good, actually. I like it a lot.
I thought they just shipped a dongle.
No. You get headphones with the Pixel 3.
Oh.
Yeah, very nice ones.
But those don't fit in my ears. This fits in my ears.
By the way, Google's USB-C to a headphone adapter dongle works on an iPad Pro as well, which is good news. I guess there is a standard now for that. They do not include... Oh, they do. I'm sorry. With the slate, they include the adapter as well, so you could use regular headphones. He seems like he liked it. He says, as much as I liked it in my first week, it's not a device for everyone. Not everyone needs a Chrome OS tablet when a 2-in-1 might be better suited. You should ask yourself these two questions, Jeff, to decide if the Pixel Slate is for you. Oh, that's another article. Okay, now I have to go to that article. He doesn't say what the questions are. Here are the two questions. True tablet or 2-in-1 Chromebook? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do you really want a tablet, you know?
I actually think I want a Chromebook, but that's okay.
Yeah, I think the Spin might be a better choice then. The reason I haven't bought one yet, I really like my Pixelbook, and I don't find a need to upgrade. And then how much performance do you need? And that's because performance, at least on this, comes at a pretty steep price.
So I have big Chromebook news.
Ooh, tell us.
Carsten and I did this before the show. So finally, Skype works with video calls in the Chrome browser.
Oh.
So we tested that, Carsten and I did before the show, not in the Android Skype app, because that we know does not work
in
well.
In-browser Skype.
But the in-browser Skype on the Chromebook, finally, all it did was calls before. Now it does video calls.
And it works.
And Carsten said it works. And the fact that he liked the camera on my Chromebook made me look better than this camera.
Oh. Oh.
Exciting.
Oh.
So he was ready to just make that the device for the show, but I said, no, let's play safe. I don't want to get in trouble.
So we'll get more with Kevin next week, or you could listen to the IoT podcast from this week, right, Stacey? You spent some time.
We do not talk about Chromebooks on the podcast. We talk
How dare
before
you,
we do
Stacey?
The show.
Well, Kevin will be filling in for Stacey next week. So,
I'm not here next week. I'll likely be on.
So,
oh God! So he was going to fill in for Jeff.
Now he'll just be on as an extra guest.
All three of
Actually,
you.
He's
on.
Filling in for Leo.
I am not going to be here next week. I'm going to be in Manhattan watching a play.
I'm going to be in Paris, but I now not flying. Well, just for a day and a half. But I'll probably be able to do the show for at least a while that night. So come in here, Kevin.
All right. So there you go. There's I really don't.
Yeah.
I should order it to review it. I think Jason Howell is going to do that. So we'll get a chance to play with it a little bit. I just don't feel like I need to replace my Pixelbook.
Yeah, same here. I wouldn't mind a new Pixelbook. They could sucker me into buying a new Pixelbook just because it has more performance and memory or whatever. Again, I would kill for LTE in it. And I'm surprised they didn't put LTE in the tablet.
Yeah, boy, that's a missing piece. I guess
especially now they have 5.
Well, I guess their feeling is you could just hotspot from your phone. Why wouldn't you just do that? Why would
don't they have like an instant tether feature, or is that Apple? That might be Apple.
Apple does.
Oh, they do. They have instant tether, but it's just. Yeah.
Well, let's do a little change log. What do you say, kids?
Ooh, he was right on that button, man. Did not waste a millisecond.
Yeah, and the big story is it isn't Project Fi anymore. It's Google Fi. And actually, even bigger story, you can now use it on many Android phones and even your iPhone.
Heresy.
Heresy. Heresy. It does take some extra configuration to use on your iPhone, and there are some features missing. In particular, voicemail. You won't get the visual voicemail. You'll still get a text with the text of the voicemail, but if you want to listen to the voicemail, you actually have to call the voicemail number. Big deal on an iPhone. And you do have to go in there and mess with it a bit. Messages will work over Wi-Fi, but to get it to work for SMS over Fi, you'll need to change some settings. All of that is pretty straightforward. But you get many of the benefits of Google Fi, which both Jeff and I use and love. It's $20 a month for voice and text, unlimited voice and text in the U.S. International travelers will pay a little more for the voice calls, but not much. And the text continues to be unlimited for the $20 base price. And then data is $10 a gigabyte, up to 6 gigabytes. And then free after that until you get to 15 gigabytes. And then you have a choice of either being throttled or paying $10 a gigabyte for the next.
Oh, you do have a choice then.
Yeah, you can. Uh-huh. You can after 15. I read this, but I'd forgotten about it. Paul Thurrott tried it when he was in Europe. He said, "Yeah, let's. You know, I could." They actually notify you. They say, "Hey, you're coming up on 15 gigs. Would you like to be throttled?" He said, "Let it throttle it." And he said it was fine. Or would you like to pay and have full speed at the same price, $10 a gigabyte for subsequent gigabytes? So that's very fair, if you ask me. Sure, it works internationally in 100 some countries, almost 200 countries. That's nice too, because if you travel a lot, you don't have to do anything. Your phone just continues to work, data continues to work, and you pay the same price, except for, as I said, long distance calls from Europe. The Fi app, there will be a Fi app for iOS, which will help you a little bit configuring Google Fi to work with iOS. It's actually quite a nice looking app. The other thing that Paul Thurrott said, and I hadn't seen this, is that it won't do that special thing Google Fi does on Pixel phones, which is hunt for the best network. The way Fi works on a Pixel, for instance, is it will use T-Mobile, Sprint, or U.S. Cellular, or Wi-Fi, whichever of the four is the strongest, and it hands off seamlessly. So I'll be at home on Wi-Fi, drive out my door, drive out, you know, up the driveway. It'll switch over to T-Mobile, and the call will continue as if nothing had happened, which is pretty cool. Apparently, the ability to detect or to operate on other networks is not on other phones, not on all phones. I think those phones will show up as T-Mobile or always use T-Mobile.
One odd thing about my 5 phone, and again, I use it mainly internationally. So yeah. I use my older Pixel, my original Pixel. It can take sometimes a half a day to get configured to the network.
Really? I've not experienced that.
I don't know what it is or why it is. It's very weird. If anybody from Google is hearing and knows what the problem might be, I don't know. But it just won't hook in. And finally it does. I've never had it not do it.
So a lot of phones, Samsung phones, Moto phones, LG phones, OnePlus phones will work now with Google Fi as well as iOS phones. So you really, it's basically now they are a real service, not just a Project Fi. They are Google Fi. So
Jeff, what happens when it doesn't connect? So what are you using? Are you roaming or?
You can't.
No, I have to use my US phone.
Oh, my AT&T phone.
I have never experienced that ever.
Wait. So now you can get up to 900 if you buy, if you go to the Google page, which I had to go to incognito because it kept on taking me to my own account.
Right.
You go to the five page and you shop for phones. It says that if you order a Pixel 3, you get up to $999 in travel gift cards.
I'm still not ordering a Pixel 3.
Oh, that would pay me free.
Have you been seeing the Pixel? I can't believe the amount of money Google's spending on NFL games for the Pixel 3.
Really?
Monday Night Football.
I'm not a real man, so I don't watch.
If you were a man, you'd know. Google,
Jeff, that's okay. I'm not a real man either.
apparently, I'm the only real man around here. On Monday Night Football, they're doing a great job because they're showing. First, they show the best shot thing. They show the great video with people, their face all squinched up.
Yes.
They show that, and then they do a great night sight demo. They do a wide angle selfie demo. They must be spending millions on marketing this phone. And I'll tell you, if it sounds like they think that the number one feature people are looking for in a smartphone is a camera, because that's what they're pushing. And I have to say, they have the best camera on the market. So if that's what you wanted.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of how much they spent, not only did they buy the NFL Monday Night Football, which I have to think is expensive, they had Queen and AC/DC as the real music from the real artists as their background music. That's got to cost a pretty penny.
I don't know. Wait, Queen, Freddie Mercury, he's dead.
But they still have to pay for it. Death does not let you off the hook.
But you're saying they were singing live in the background, or were?
No. Oh. They weren't live.
Hey, I was very confused, Leo. I'm like, did they get his hologram?
No, yeah. Now Freddie Mercury was in. Here is the Pixel ad. Let me play it for you. For a night sight. This is the one you'd see. And they're using the Queen song for Flash Gordon to show how bad flash photography looks. Everybody's blinded. They take pictures of food. It looks horrible. Everybody's annoyed in the restaurant. You're at a concert trying to take pictures. All you get is your girlfriend. Lose the flash, not the moment. And then they show night sight, and it looks so good. And a brilliant, by the way, use of Queen. Flash. Ha ha. You want to see the selfie cam ad?
Here we go. Wait.
Move your head towards
I don't know who this ad is. Who this song is.
Get in.
It's Aerosmith.
Is it? Of course it is. Steve Perry, yeah. Living on the edge. That's perfect. It's perfect. Let's see what is the other one. It's actually... These are really good ads. Let's see. So Google's got, I don't know what their marketing budget is, but holy cow. Oh, Pixel Slate has not been authorized as required by the rules of the Federal Communications Commission. This device is not and may not be offered for sale or lease or sold or leased.
1, 2, 3.
It's another one. These are all the new things from Google. It's funny because you don't think of Google as a hardware company trying to make money on hardware.
And bring it down, and we're going to switch.
That's why I have a Google Home Hub.
So I'm just looking at this. So you really do. So you get travel certificates. You know
what kind of travel
gift cards?
Oh,
like Delta Airlines, Airbnb, Hotels.com, Southwest Airlines.
Today only.
Equal in the amount of the purchase.
It ends tonight at midnight Pacific.
So it's a free phone.
A free phone if you're going to use those services.
I mean, as much as I travel, yeah.
Go get it.
Go, Jeff. Go.
Jeff, man.
Jeff Jarvis. Okay, I'm so sorry, Jeff. I can't.
You're in a good mood, Stacey. I like it.
Wait till you hear
my She's happy about ARM servers.
I am so ecstatic.
All you need to do to make Stacey happy is ARM servers.
ARM servers.
Exciting chip news does the trick.
Let's see.
You know, although here's my question, you guys.
Yes.
I have big fears because all of the major hardware companies like Apple, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, they're developing their own chips for various different TPUs or the Bionic.
Apple's going to replace all the Intel chips.
So what does that mean as you shrink the huge buyers of these chips? What does that mean for everyone else who is dependent on them? And it's a fundamental restructuring of like the chip industry, which is already consolidating. But I sit there and I think about that a lot because, you know, a lot of innovation comes from startups, but historically, a lot of innovation, especially in actual manufacturing, has come from the bigger companies. And I know TSMC does a lot there too, but it's the designs from like the big companies that force them to do that. Anyway, this is something I'm thinking a lot about. So if anyone wants to talk about this, you just give me a call.
Steve Tyler, not Steve Perry. Steve Perry is the lead singer of Journey.
Jane's Addiction. Which they played at AWS. They played Been Caught Stealing.
It's all tied together.
Ta-da!
With ARM servers. What are you moaning about?
That's Perry Farrell.
Perry Farrell.
Oh,
Stephen Perry. Isn't he the guy who's like, the lights
Journey.
Go down in the city.
Oh, Journey.
And the sun shines on.
Well, and then there's
and then Joe like Perry, who's the guitarist for Aerosmith. So it all got muddled. Of course, I meant Steven Tyler, the guy with the lips.
Man, Carson, you sounded almost insulted. I feel bad now. You were like, ugh.
He was really upset. Apparently, Jane's Addiction fan.
I'm a Jane's Addiction fan. I'm just bad at names.
Yeah, me too. Did you know that Google's chief business officer is named Phil Schindler? That's confusing.
Yeah, I know him.
Yeah, Philip Schindler, not Phil Schiller. Wrote about Disney and Google expanding their strategic relationship as we continue with the changelog. Disney and Google share a passion.
Oh my God, we're still in the changelog.
Yeah. That's what I was just like.
That's why I said that, a little parenthetically.
We're in the magic wonderland. We're never going to leave.
Google's going to power advertising for Disney's brands, Disney, ABC, ESPN, Marvel, Pixar, and Star Wars. This is funny because, of course, the relationship between Disney, Pixar, and Apple is pretty tight. But I guess Apple doesn't have an ad platform. So there. Google is acquiring a $1 billion Mountain View office park. It's 2018's largest Bay Area real estate deal. Congratulations. Just before Thanksgiving, they bought Britannia Shoreline, 51 acres across from and larger than the Googleplex. There are 12 structures there, but they're going to tear those down, I'm sure.
Didn't they do the largest real estate deal in New York when they did the Chelsea?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Bought that office block?
That's right.
Oh, I have to tell you, Kevin has sent me a correction saying that the FCC approved the whatever it was that you said wasn't approved.
I know they did, but for some reason on the YouTube ad, yeah, because he's got one, so obviously it's approved now. But for some reason on that YouTube ad,
he also says Skype has worked in the browser for months. I don't know. I just want you to know this because he sends them to me, and I'm like, oh, do I convey this?
We should give TOEFL a hotline.
Skype has worked in as phone calls, but I was not getting the video opportunity. Now I am.
Oh,
I don't know.
I don't know what Kevin has to say about that. If he's in the chat,
Kevin, I'm sure knew what to do, and I was stupid.
So Google bought Chelsea Market for $2.4 billion. So that was a little more expensive, but that's Manhattan.
God, to go down on the first floor there, it's worse than going through Times Square. Tourists.
Yeah.
Oh, thick.
And do they have Desnudas or Tickle Me Elmo walking around?
No Elmos. Just tourists. I've had to go to meetings in that building, and it's just torture to get through it.
Yeah.
What are they touristing about? What's down there?
The first floor of Chelsea Market is hip shops and restaurants and things.
Oh. No wonder I don't know about it. It's hip.
Google is updating its fast pairing feature on Android and Chromebooks. So you can simultaneously pair compatible Bluetooth devices with phones, tablets, and laptops that share the same Google account. This is kind of like what Apple does with AirPods. When you link the headphones to one product, all the devices connected to the account will automatically pair. That's very convenient.
Ooh, I'm just going to guess it won't work with my account. Just going to guess.
Yeah, probably not.
Jeff, you know what? They should just send you like a special, Jeff, not for you.
Not for you, Jeff.
No convenience for you, Jeff.
You're on the need not to use list, Jeff.
And that
I'm on it too, Jeff.
Is our
it's almost
Google
enough.
Change log.
I was going to say it's almost enough to get me to like find an alternative to G Suites just so I can avoid the G Suite penalty.
I've debated going off of it, but I don't know how to.
We use G Suites at work, so I have Leo at twit.tv, but I have my Google account, Laporte at Gmail. What did I use for all of those things? Is a consumer account.
Right, but I use my business calendar, for example, and when I travel, if I make things in my business email, then they don't flow over into places I need it to flow.
That's why I use calendar sharing.
I have calendar sharing, but I can't, you know, share my calendar on my Google stuff.
Yeah. No.
It's a little easier if you log into your phone under your personal account, but then what happens is you end up doing more things. Like I'll send invites out from my personal thing when I mean to do it from my.
And we saw how that cost Hillary Clinton the presidency. So I would warn you.
Yes.
Don't pull an Ivanka.
Speaking of Ivanka, she and Tim Cook visited a school. I put the links up on the, and there's a controversy here. So Ivanka and Apple were buddying up in Idaho. Down under other.
That's interesting. Apple's donated iPads to students and Macs to teachers in schools in this district. This was
and the students protested because they don't like the iPads.
Yeah. Huh. People are upset about this because
Steve Cook and Ivanka Trump were buddying up to each other.
Tim Cook and Ivanka liked each other. Shame. We should make them walk naked through the town square ringing a bell. Shame. MIT, this is actually the big story of the maybe the week, the year, the decade.
CRISPR, baby.
Chinese scientists, according to a story in the MIT Technology Review, have used CRISPR to gene edit embryos to actually eliminate. They eliminate a gene called CCR5, which would render these children resistant to HIV, smallpox, and cholera. Now, what's not clear, we know they're doing this according to Chinese medical documents posted online. What's not clear is if those embryos have been gestated to birth.
Two twin girls were born.
Oh, then we know they have.
Live.
So they have made So the Associated Press then updated the story from the Technology Review to say one couple in the trial, according to the doctor, He Jiankui, who is doing this, one couple gave birth to twin girls this month. AP was not able to confirm this independently. He released a promotional video. So there you go. This is both shocking and amazing. CRISPR is a gene editing technique that's somewhat like cut and paste.
And illegal.
Illegal in the U.S.
Illegal in Europe, in the U.S.
But not in China. Shame.
No, China says
shame.
That.
Shame.
So that's actually unclear. Get that? Shame.
It's an app.
I need the shame app.
The Bell of Shame app.
A team at the Southern University of Science and Technology, Shenzhen, China, has been recruiting couples in an effort to create the first gene-edited babies. I don't think it's illegal in China, apparently, but it is illegal in most of the world. Maybe not appropriately. Of course, the real concern is, I don't think anybody would complain about the elimination of the CCR5 gene, but that's just one of the many things, one of the wonderful things. You can make children that glow in the dark if you wish. They're one of the many things you can do with the CRISPR technology. There's also the issue.
You won't lose them.
I have seen reports that sometimes CRISPR causes errors elsewhere in the gene. So there may be some side effects. I don't know. I'm not an expert on CRISPR. But this is, there's the risk of introducing unwanted mutations. Or, according to the Technology Review, yielding a baby whose body is composed of some edited and some unedited cells. I don't know if that's bad or good. What do you think?
It certainly changes things. I mean,
That's what I meant when I said this could be the story of the year, really. We've known that this was coming at some point, that somebody, rogue or otherwise, was going to do this. Apparently, it has been done now in China. genetic editing of embryos to produce children that in this case are resistant to HIV, cholera, and malaria.
So in China, the MIT technology story says currently using a genetically engineered embryo to establish a pregnancy would be illegal in much of Europe, prohibited in the U.S., and is also prohibited in China under a 2003 ministerial guidance to IVF clinics.
But that's the problem. It's a guidance, not a law.
It is not clear if Hay got special permission or disregarded the guidance,
which may not have the force of law.
Right. Yeah. I got to think, though, in China, you don't do anything like this without government.
Yeah. And you don't announce it if you don't feel pretty secure in the fact that you're not going to jail tomorrow. But I would say that's moral panic, Jeff.
Yes. Cue, Jeff. Cue panic.
It's probably prudent to pass those laws until you can be sure that this stuff could be done safely.
I think it is. Yeah.
But honestly, think of all the benefit. This is going to, I mean, talk about Pandora's box. This is going to, this is now, because there's all sorts of beneficial things you can think of, but there's huge consequences in the case of haves and have-nots, where people can choose to have smarter, more athletic, more attractive babies because they can afford to have the editing, or perhaps, you know, I mean, there's always been genetic editing in a very primitive way.
Hold on. Because CRISPR can be, and they're not researching it, but there is the theory, and I think they've done it in animals, that actually you can change genes in people who are living. So
after the fact, yeah.
After the birth. Before. Yeah.
Postnatal.
PN.
That's kind of me. I'm just postnatal. We're all postnatal.
You wouldn't have... I mean, there's going to be limits possibly. I mean, who knows? But it's possible we could get similar updates, or more importantly, our kids. Like, as someone with a 12-year-old, I'm like, oh my gosh, is my child now obsolete? Ugh.
I just think this is huge. We knew it was coming. It was inevitable. CRISPR has made some real progress. I don't know what to say except that this could be a watershed moment in humanity where we're actually able to edit genes and reprogram the blueprints of life itself.
Yes. What would you do I've been thinking about this. I'm like, what kind of things? I mean, first you have to decide if it's something that is expressed easily in a gene and is not, you know, part of like multiple genes.
Well, I mean, look, we know already that people have used more brutal methods to get rid of girls and keep boys. That is clearly, that kind of genetic editing would be clearly immoral and wrong, and it'd be easy to pass a law against that, harder to enforce. But I don't think CRISPR actually can do something that dramatic. I think it's much more you can snip out or replace, you know, little portions of the gene. You're not going to take a whole Y chromosome out or something. But,
you just abort that girl baby.
Right.
I mean, you're not going to.
That's what I'm saying. It's been done. It's been done for years in more primitive fashion.
But there are traits like intelligence. Those actually, we don't know where those are. So we can't. Some of this stuff we can't do. Now you could actually, your glow in the dark baby, bioluminescent babies. We understand.
Yeah, CRISPR's been
gene.
Used to do that.
Yeah, so.
Actually, that's why I turn pink on the show all the time.
I mean, mostly you could see this in genetics for you could take out the BRCA gene variant, for instance. Right.
One gene can have multiple effects is the issue.
Well, right. That's right. We don't really understand. I think the real problem is we don't really understand this very well. Or sickle cell anemia could be eliminated in certain populations. But, yeah. And we don't, you're right. Intelligence is a much more difficult issue. Or athleticism.
Isn't it true that if you change a gene in me and then I father a child,
it's not guaranteed.
The genes are changed in the next generations. So you're having an impact past the one person.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's like climate change, only it's on our species. Okay.
I'm telling you that you're going to look back and say, well, that was everything changed suddenly. Or maybe not. I don't know. Maybe this is, the guy could be lying.
No, Leo, you can't walk it back, dude. Yeah, that too. You just got to be, it's a big, I agree with you, man. It's a big moment.
I think so. Logitech is not buying Plantronics after all.
We didn't think they were, but that's like, never mind.
There was a rumor there were. It was going to be a big purchase. They were in talks. Right. Ohio is the first state to accept Bitcoin for tax payments. Too bad Bitcoin just lost 40% of its value in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, redeem that payment quickly.
Corel is buying Parallels, which is a virtualization company.
VMware software. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
I used to run that on a.
Yeah, I like Parallels. It's good. It's a way to run Windows on a Mac or that kind of thing.
It used to be SW Software, or was it?
I don't know.
Anyway, yeah. Okay.
Australia.
I didn't know Corel was still around.
Corel, yeah. They used to be WordPerfect, but then they've really branched out. And I think we were talking about this on Windows Weekly. They really are more a portfolio company than anything else these days. Oh, look, this whole time, I didn't even know it. I've had a Facebook portal looking at my crotch. I don't know what. what were you doing down there, little portal? You thought I might want to use that on the show today? I just noticed it. Australia to build a pirate-proof fence. This is a little scary from the Register today. Yes. Australia is certain to have a new site-blocking regime imposed by the government, with a Senate committee deciding to waive the legislation through. The draft law has passed the Senate today. It will go to the House of Representatives. The Copyright Amendment Online Infringement Bill 2018. If it does pass, and the Register thinks it seems likely to pass, it would give rights holders greatly expanded powers to force takedowns of infringing content. Is this kind of like Article 13 in the EU copyright
bill? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Article 13 has preemptive requirements of the platforms. This is postnatal.
So it's post facto. Rights holders, postnatal, will be able to seek injunctions against search engines requesting blocks on file sharing sites and block what the legislation calls alternative pathways to pirated content. The test for a site's illegality will be widened from sites whose primary purpose is infringement, kind of like a BitTorrent, linking site, to cover sites whose primary effect is infringement. All right. So the committee recommends Bill's operation be reviewed 2 years after it kicks into action. The only party dissenting, the Green Party. Senator Janet Wright opposed site blocking, saying copyright is better addressed by making the content available conveniently, affordably, and in a timely way. What a revolutionary idea. You got a piracy problem? Make it easier to buy. What a thought.
Copyright is a Gutenberg-era notion.
IP is a Gutenberg-era notion, right?
Yes, this whole notion of property.
Intellectual.
Thought as property, right? Yeah.
Let's take a break because your picks of the week are coming up next. But chat room's already been talking about Curiosity Stream. Mm-hmm. Curiosity Stream, they've got a very good offer on their website right now. Curiosity Stream is the world's first streaming service addressing our lifelong quest to learn, explore, and understand. If you listen to this show, I think you are a natural Curiosity Stream user. Great documentaries. John Hendricks founded it. He was the founder of the Discovery Channel. They've got apps on every platform, of course, web app, Roku, Android, Xbox One, smart TVs, iOS, Chromecast. You'll find it on your Fire, your Kindle, your Apple TV. It's available worldwide without restriction. Contents span science, nature, history, technology, society, and lifestyle. If you visit curiositystream.com/twit, you will see many of the 2,000-plus nonfiction programs in all of those areas. Stephen Hawking's favorite places, The Hunt for Dark Matter, Birth of the Internet, Cyber War. Unlimited access starts at just $2.99 a month. And you can have a premium plan, which includes 4K and Ultra HD streaming, which is really nice. I just love learning. When I watch TV, I really often say, Lisa and I will both say this, let's watch something good. Let's watch a documentary tonight. Curiosity Stream always has something good and healthful to learn. If you've got kids around the house, it's great too. CuriosityStream.com /twit. Unlimited access to the world's top documentaries and nonfiction series. Oh, by the way, little something for our listeners. If you use the promo code TWIT when prompted during the sign-up process, your membership is completely free for the first month. Visit curiositystream.com/twit and use the code TWIT to get 1 month free. curiositystream.com/twit. We really love them. It's nice to have that on your TV waiting for you. Stacy, was it you who told me that the iDevices device?
The outlets, yes.
The outlets. I bought 7 or 8 of them. Yeah.
Are those working for you?
Yeah, except what happened? Are they fully waterproof?
They're either IP65 or okay, IP64 good. Rated.
Okay. I've been having some shorting problems.
Uh-oh. Here. Hold up.
Somebody told me that even though they're called outdoor, they actually aren't waterproof. So I just move them in under the roof. It says perfect for any outdoor environment, rugged, rain-tight design.
Yeah, let me look at their IPV rating.
I don't see an IP rating. That's IPV rating. That's what kind of concerned me a little bit. Anyway, they are controlling my my Christmas lights. And except for that minor thing where they set off the GFI circuit.
Oh, sometimes that happens with normal Christmas lights, too.
Oh, could be.
So that
they
has
draw a
in
lot
my
of
house.
Power. You know, I was surprised. Actually, the nice thing about the iDevices, besides the fact that I can turn these on from here, if it gets to be a gloomy day, is it tells you power consumption.
Oh, yeah.
Which is fascinating because I had no idea our Christmas lights are costing us $6 a night.
Do you not have LEDs?
Yeah, they're LEDs. There's just a lot of them.
Wow.
Do we have a picture of the display?
Yeah, I think on my blog. Let me just see, because I think this is so cool. 7 hours. Oh, no, it's gone down. Okay, this was when we were installing it. 7 hours daily use 16 cents. That's not too bad. That's for set one. Here's set two. Oh, no, these are the expensive ones. 7 hours daily use $6.76. So this is which ones are these? These are. Yeah, this is the front yard. I think they're all LEDs, but there's some blinking ones, and there's some ice crystals. They're a little bit more expensive. But see, I just turn them on right here like that. Boom. My Christmas lights are on. Turn them off like
very
that.
Very tasteful, Leo.
That's not what
I was,
what
I was
like.
Expecting garish.
Oh, you're looking at the blog?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought. Well,
very
you were
tasteful.
Wait a minute. You're expecting garish?
Because I thought you'd go for a hoot and overdo it and have dancing Santas and things.
No.
At least wouldn't allow that.
No, it's pretty, I think. I like the net lights. These balls up in the portico, what you don't see is the blinking icicles and the stars and stuff that are behind there. These balls keep falling down, though. My balls drop, and it's terrible. It's terrible.
You didn't have to do that.
Punch Leo.
But it is pretty, and it's festive, and I think I like it. I like it.
I'm still not finding their IP rating.
Yeah, I don't think they have one. But anyway, they're now under the eve. I think that's a better place for them. And they haven't popped the circuit in a while.
But, I've got to ask you a completely off question. So now that I'm on your blog, you have that lovely picture of Lisa getting married.
Yes. There's a picture of you. Here's the picture of you. So the front page rotates. There's a picture of you, me, and Gina at Google I.O. So the front page is different images all the time.
So the wedding picture, you have next to no hair. Was that because of New Year's Eve?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Lisa
was upset.
Yes.
No wonder she was upset.
We got married a month later.
I hadn't put two and two together there. That's so funny.
I shaved my head for UNICEF. We raised $80,000, something like that. I also got a little tiny tattoo on my butt. The hair has grown back, but every time Lisa sees my butt, she says, nice tattoo. And I go, oh, crap. I've forgotten.
Yeah, I put that together. Thanks.
You shaved too, Jeff. We shaved you for the...
Well, but only this.
Yeah. It was fun. We raised a lot of money. I missed those New Year's Eve things, but...
I do too.
Yeah, they were a lot of fun. Leo,
I found an answer for you on your... It is not IP. It's rated rain tight by UL, according to iDevices.
What's that mean?
So I guess it means it's rain tight.
So. Oh, rain tight is different. I wouldn't want to submerge it in water.
Right.
Okay. We've been getting some pretty severe storms out here. Thank goodness. Now after the fires, we're more than welcome. But it did short. They're on a GFI circuit, so I waited till things dried out, pushed the reset, and it's working fine. Stacy, I didn't mean to interrupt. That was your pick from some time ago. What do you have this week?
Oh, okay. So this week, I'm trying out a new device. So I'll tell you about that next week once I know how well it works or doesn't work. But I went out because Starbucks has a brand new coffee. I've been tweeting about this because I've been so infatuated by it.
What's it
Starbucks
called?
Introduced the Juniper Latte. And as a gin lover and a coffee lover, I was like, can I bring my two loves together? The answer is I cannot.
So juniper is the holly berry that gives that unique flavor to many gins.
Which is wonderful. Yes.
Traditional gins.
It does. It tastes Christmassy. It tastes like forests and
a light
deliciousness.
Pine flavor with delightful citrus undertones.
And hangovers. Tastes like hangovers.
So they also like put pine citrus sugar on it.
They do. So my challenge when I got one this afternoon, because I asked people for their takes, and most people had negative takes. One person said it was fruity and kind of had a floral undertone. He liked it, but nobody else has. So I tried it. I did not like it. I think if I were going to try it again, I would probably try it with the blonde roast, because the bitterness of the coffee really fought with the kind of florally.
Or just get yourself some goddamn gin and drink it.
That's your other option. So I just want to let everybody know, since this has been my Twitter quest for the last 2 days, I thought I'm going to talk about it.
The Juniper Latte.
People who might see this. Yeah, because it's their new holiday drink.
It tastes like.
And it just was announced.
According to Fox News, it tastes like grass and dirt. But
I didn't get dirt.
Yeah.
But I'll give it grass.
Fox would probably like it better if it said Merry Christmas on the cup. I did not get a red cup. I got a green cup. I guess they have different holiday cups.
How about this, Stacy?
There you go. How about coffee gin?
I would try that.
Ginprut coffee gin.
Those crazy Germans.
What's your favorite gin?
I have four.
Okay, out with it.
Super junipery, so you feel like forest. It is St. George Terroir.
Ooh.
It's made in California. If you want a smooth drinking gin with a hint of cardamom,
ooh.
209. If you are in the middle of Spain and it's hot and you want a kind of original gin, get a gin mare and have it with rosemary.
Mm.
It's delicious. And what's my other? Oh, it's made in Utah. It's called Jackrabbit Gin. It's from a small distillery called Beehive. And it is excellent in cocktails and in martinis. It's a little sweeter.
Wow.
Yes, I love my gin.
Which 209 do you like? There's a number of them.
I like the normal 209, although they have a kosher 209, which
kosher for Passover is useful. Gin and vodka. Yeah,
I believe it is the only kosher gin out there.
Nice. And they have Chardonnay barrel, Sauvignon Blanc barrel, or Cabernet Sauvignon barrel gin as well. I'm going to try this. I am a G&T drinker.
So 209 makes a really good gin and tonic. I would recommend using Q tonic or the Fever Tree lighter tonic. Q is a little better for that because it's less sweet and it'll let the flavor shine through, I think. Yeah. But that's just me.
Cool. I just go for the G.
Just straight G.
Just straight G. That's
no vermouth.
If
no
I can
nothing,
get you guys
G.
to come out for Twit on Sunday, the 23rd. We have to bribe people because it's 2 days before Christmas. We're going to open a bottle of $5,000 cognac.
Oh, my.
Still not doing it.
Louis XIII cognac.
$20 gin, you might have us.
Yeah. Yeah. In that beautiful crystal bottle.
Why are you doing this? What?
It's just a bribe. A bribe to get people to come to the... Because it's 2 days, it's the day before Christmas Eve. And because it's more fun to do those holiday twits a little 100%. Warmed up.
Oh.
I have yet to find a bottle of it. I promised Alex Lindsay. No, I will. And it may not be $5,000. It may be less than that.
What if it's more?
Yeah.
Okay.
Somebody, I don't know. It depends how much you get. I'm not going to get a Jeroboam of it. That would be crazy talk. They do make a Jeroboam. Holy cow.
I know nothing about cognac, so.
Well, how would you like to learn?
I don't think I should learn on a $5,000 bottle.
You'll never enjoy it again by anybody else. Mr. Jeff Jarvis, you're on
my hotel in Stockholm. They give us little tiny airline bottles of brandy every night.
Oh, that's cool.
In the room. It's kind of nice.
It's actually, you don't really sleep better.
No, I didn't have them. But I thought, I'm not going to throw this out. So I put them in my, you know, with my soap and deodorant. So I have them. I'll put them in the liquor cabinet. But anyway.
Oh, if you want, guys, I can put the gin advent calendar in the show notes.
Oh,
there's a gin advent calendar? Which is a different gin
every night. Yeah, here. Instead of my... Since we've gone off the rails.
Oh, my God.
Next week, I do have a connected device for you. So it's not totally crazy, but...
I'm gonna match that. Hold on 1 second. I'm going to find this. Give me a second. Give me a second here. Vamp, all talk right, for a second. I'm going to find...
I just put my advent calendar in there.
Okay, here we go. I have for you.
Yeah. We should do advent calendars today because Saturday is December 1st.
Yes.
All right.
That's why I was like, oh, I should do this for people.
So this is the size of a quilt because it has to have a bottle of gin in 25 different openings there. So it's 25 little bottles of gin on the wall.
I'd take that.
I am really sad. Like, this is one of those things where I'm like, oh, I wish my husband would, like, see this and get it for me. But not yet. One day.
So one day. I have for you, I'll match your gin advent calendar.
Yes.
And I'll raise it with a beef advent calendar from the German magazine Beef. It's in the rundown. And it's on the comments.
A beef? So, like, do you get...
Seid ihr nicht gefunden?
Four. Oh, four.
Oh.
Fünf. Fünf, zero, fünf.
Fünf.
Hold on. I'll put it
how
now.
Is that how you say it? Fünf, zero, fünf?
Fünf, null, fünf.
Fünf, null, fünf.
No, vier. That's vier. Vier.
Fünf is five.
I'll put it under... I'm going to put it under...
Vier, null, fünf.
It's right there under Stacey's things, under the gin advent calendar. Try that. See if that works. There.
Ah, beef adventure.
A beef adventskiste.
Ooh. Ooh, yum. Yum.
69 euros.
Get my tummy.
Beef. Have we talked about Beef magazine before on the show?
I think you've mentioned it. Is it only in German?
Yes. It's only in German. It is beautiful. I had it on the screen in my class. I was laughing with it. If you just search for beef.
I think magazine. I want this gin vent calendar is what I want.
I'm having a hard time finding a way to buy it in the U.S. I'm having a hard time. I'm very sad.
It says we can't actually ship to the United States at this moment. The gin vent
calendar. We need what you need is someone in the U.K. to buy it and then to send it to you.
Ideally, each dram you uncover from behind the 24 windows would be a total surprise.
That is a Scotch calendar
Scotch.
Right there.
That's right. No wonder I was talking like that.
This I'm like, I don't know about that one.
The master of malt calendar. But there is gin.
Yeah, so that's...
There is gin.
Oh, wait. Amazon had it.
Here's a whole page of advent calendars with booze.
Yeah, but gin is the only fun one.
The Boutique Gin Company? How about this? Would you like that? I can get you that. Oh, you can actually ship to you in the U.S.
Okay. All right, see? But they have 209 in there.
Here's the gin vent. Yeah.
All right.
Well, wait a minute. You can buy it at the Whiskey Exchange. Shop now.
Oh, okay, now crap. You're moving into an Irish accent. What is that?
That's normal. All right. Jeff, did you have a number as well? Or do you want to make the beef? That could be yours.
Give me mine. Let's see what I have real quickly. Speaking of beef,
yes.
The question that's been roiling the internet today is how big is the big cow?
How big is it? Is it real? Is it not?
What's the big cow?
So the big cow has been on Twitter of this gigantic cow Now, the Washington Post is a killjoy and says that it's neither a cow nor a giant because it's not a cow. It's a steer.
Okay. It's a 6 foot, 4 inch steer, and it's real. Here's the New York Times has a video. It went unsold at an auction because potential buyers said it wouldn't fit in their, quote, farm equipment. That's an interesting euphemism. It's farm equipment. So he's a steer. He's real, not a cow. Well, yes, but it's a cow-ish thing. It's a male cow, which would be a steer.
Cousin of it. Yes. Yeah.
Well, it's not a cousin. It's just a male. It's a boy.
He's kind of acting like a Great Dane, scared of little cows.
It's actually not the world's largest steer. It's 3 inches short of the Guinness World Record for tallest living steer. But no one bought it because you couldn't fit it in the equipment.
Very clever of you, steer.
Yes.
Way to stay alive.
You know what his name is?
Some pig.
Knickers.
Knickers.
So did you say some pig?
Yes. Because, you know, they didn't process Wilbur.
That'll do,
because
pig.
That's Babe. This is to avoid getting killed. Wilbur had Charlotte spin the web of some pig.
Right.
Yeah, anyway.
He's 2 inches taller than Arnold Schwarzenegger. And weighs 2,800 pounds.
So this is what I'm missing by not being on Twitter. Is that what you're saying?
There you go. See, you could have seen the story of the big cow.
It's finally happened that I feel left out of the conversation because I'm not a Twitter user.
Yeah, well, the big cow was everywhere.
Everywhere on Twitter. Oh, maybe Facebook.
Meanwhile, Brand Watch named Taylor Swift the most influential person on Twitter. She tweeted only 13 times.
Wow. But that one tweet where she said everybody should register and vote, that had a lot of influence.
And Donald Trump is not the most influential man on Twitter, says this ridiculous survey.
I think that's not true.
Who is the most influential
Liam
person?
Liam Payne.
Oh, the singer.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
The president is easily the most influential person on Twitter.
Yeah, so this is BS, these things, but fine.
You could say
a number.
Besides the president. So since we're doing advent calendars, I will show you mine. I do this every year. The Advent of Code calendar.
I'll take gin. Thank you very much.
So each day it's going to launch in 24 hours each, or no, longer than that. Saturday, 52 hours. At midnight Eastern time on December 1st, the first puzzle will unlock. They are coding puzzles. So, you know, you can go back in time. We could look at the previous years and see. But they're fun. They're fun. They're good. And it's a lot of fun. And it forces you to do a new problem every day. It's adventofcode.com. Small programming puzzles for a variety of skill sets and skill levels. And they've been doing this for a long time, which is really cool. And a lot of people participate, so you can see other people's answers and so forth.
Sad about this gin thing. I think it's just because our whiskey shipping laws are so difficult.
Oh, yeah. They're basically blue laws.
We need a queso calendar.
No.
Just cheese.
I don't want new cheese every day. I think gin isn't bad. Gin's a good start. Chocolate's pretty good.
It has to be good chocolate. It can't be like Hershey's chocolate. Well, I mean, I'd still eat Hershey's chocolate.
There is a Godiva advent calendar. There's a Lindt.
You know, Godiva's just not my thing. It's not my jam.
No. Not my jam. What's your favorite chocolate? Here's the cheese
my
advent
favorite.
Calendar.
Oh, cheese advent calendar.
You can get it at Target.
Oh.
Just a little bite of cheese. Don't let the mice find it. What's your chocolate? What's your chocolate jam?
Oh, I don't really have I don't have a favorite chocolate. I like the Franz in Seattle. They have the Franz caramels. Those are delicious.
That's why she's moving to Seattle, boys and girls. Zephyr got the right answer, C's.
I don't love C's either. I don't love chocolate. That's probably something else I should know.
That is a weird, strange thing.
I'm not going to lie.
How can you not love chocolate? Ladies and gentlemen, confirm your age. No. This is Cannabis Christmas, just in time for the new laws. What states is that available in? Washington and California and Colorado. Cannabis Christmas calendar. And all of Canada. I feel like this might have gone a little too far. It took the fun out of it. There's more than one of these, apparently.
Cannabis calendars?
Yeah.
I believe it.
25 I don't know if I'd wanna... days of different strains.
Yeah. I might want to spread that out over more than just the month. I could have a gin and tonic every night, but I don't know if I could get high every night.
That would not be good.
I mean, I can't because in Texas it's illegal.
Yeah, it would be wrong.
I'm sure you would never do that.
I would never break the law.
There is a let's get wasted calendar.
These are not my goals.
24 beers. Well, that's the this week in Microsoft calendar is beers.
I don't want to end this show, but I guess I best. Stacey Higginbotham is available at her website, stacyonIoT.com. When you're there, you sign up for the newsletter. That way you'll get her weekly at GigaStacy on the Twitter. I will not be here next week, Stacey, so I hope you can hold down the fort with Jeff and Kevin.
Oh, yeah. Can I be in charge? Can I have a special hat?
Yeah. The only thing, we need somebody from the staff to read the ads so you don't have to compromise yourself, but send her the special hat.
I'll get right on that.
Carson's like, let's hate you, Stacey.
Stacey in charge is a great idea for a show. I like it. Let's do it. Here, give me the hat.
Won't there be like Jason or someone?
This is the special hat.
Oh, is that the special hat? All right. I would wear that hat.
Yeah, you'd look good in it. Jeff Jarvis is professor of journalism. Well, I have the whole thing here. I don't know if we have enough time to read it.
No. You've done it already once. You've already done it.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, at CUNY. He's also at buzzmachine.com. Many, many great books. Latest is Geek Sparing Gifts, Reinventing the News Business, but also What Would Google Do? Public Parts. Public Parts is great. Be a good gift for anybody.
You're the only one who thinks that, but that's fine. Nobody buys optimism.
Nobody buys optimism.
Nope.
That is true.
They this just week- buy those hats.
This hat.
I'm feeling more optimistic already.
Is better when you wear it backwards because it says ho, ho, ho on the front.
I would totally wear that.
You want it? I'm going to send it to you.
No. You should keep your own Christmas hat. I have a Christmas hat. I could totally wear that.
I have many Christmas hats. And I will be wearing them, by the way, on our Best Of episode because this show is normally on Wednesdays. And this year, Wednesday's Boxing Day, and we don't want to have to work on Boxing Day, so we will have a Best Of this week in Google. I will host it in a Santa outfit. There may be gin involved. I don't know. So I hope you'll tune in for that.
You should make a lion's tail using bourbon. It is a very Christmassy drink.
It sounds good. What is in a lion's tail?
Bourbon, allspice, dram, and lime.
Sounds wonderful.
It's really yummy. But you do have to have allspice dram, which is kind of a really fruity liqueur.
This but recipe requires pimento dram.
That is allspice dram.
Oh, fresh lime juice, simple syrup, Agnostura bitters, and egg white. Oh, yeah. Wow, this sounds really good.
So I don't have the egg white in mine, and it's fine. But if you want to go egg white, just extra protein.
It smooths out
some of
the edges.
It's a delicious drink. I recommend it. It makes you feel like Christmas is here.
Oh, man. I wonder where I can get this.
Liquor store. Or my house. I have some.
I'm on my way. We do This Week in Google Wednesdays, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC. Come by and watch us live. Audio and video versions are available at twit.tv/live. If you do that, visit the chat room, irc.twit.tv. And please subscribe, actually. That's the best way to do it. Then you can have it on demand and sitting on your phone waiting. Anytime you're in the mood, you could say, I feel like some Stacey and Jeff. Just fire up This Week in Google. We thank you all for being here. I will see you in 2 weeks. But Jeff and Stacey will be back next week. Jeff from Paris.
If all goes well.
Safe travels. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.